Hey, Project Big Screen listeners, you can find us every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Look, if you're a bigger guy like us, have you ever bought a shirt that technically fits, but it doesn't, like, actually fit? That's why this is my favorite brand of all f***ing time. One Bone. I'm in love with everything that I put on today. In fact, I would say I've never loved a brand more than One Bone. Trust me, you guys are going to romanticize getting dressed in the morning. That's what One Bone does. Go to onebone.com and upgrade to a fit that is actually built for you. Use code Barstool for 20% off to see the difference firsthand. After one wear, you'll understand why standard fits don't make the cut.
Frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn.
What killed the dinosaurs? Yes,
you want to come and chat with you?
I'm going to make you famous, Lizzie.
It's not Al anymore. It's Dunk.
Dunkachino?
Don't mind if I do.
I'm the Joker, baby.
Welcome to Lights, Camera, Bar. It's episode 110 of season two of the, season two of LCB. My mind's in the gutter, as always. Jeff D'Lo, Ken Jack, Gooch, and Chris Castellani coming at you on Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse, Spider-Verse 2 Day. We also have a couple interviews, one of them being one of the Spider-Men in the movie, Jake Johnson. We talked to, you know, he plays Peter B. Parker in the first one and in this one as well. We have a fun interview with him. I forgot. That was like a week ago. I forgot we talked to him. And we also have who else today?
Rupert Friend.
Rupert Friend, right, who was fucking awesome.
Was very good. The fact that I don't want to spoil anything. He knew a factoid, like a trivia fact, like blooper factoid that I just think is insane for him to know.
We have Rupert Friend and Jake Johnson. We have Spider-Verse 2, which I'm very excited to talk about. Some movie news. Fun one. I'm just about mind in the gutter. Got sick the other night before darts. We went. So myself, Ken Jack Gooch, we were at darts in the U.S. Masters. Some of the best darts players in the world come to the United States. They come to New York. Shout out if anyone follows PDC, the Premier League darts competition, all that. We went out and drink beforehand. I got very sick. I didn't really drink, but point being, I haven't eaten in like 3 or 4 days. I'm going to eat so much fucking Raisin Cane's when we're done with this. I want to puke. I want to eat so much cane that it just comes back up. I'm going to have like 10 extra breads, sauces.
What's your typical go-to Cane's order?
I go with the Caniacs. I go with like the big tenders, get the fries, and you replace the coleslaw with bread.
Big boy. Caniac. Goddamn. Yeah. I'm a box combo. No slaw, extra toast, extra sauce.
There's one opening in New York very soon. Like, I think next month. That is dangerous for Gooch.
that is going to be a miserable experience.
He's going to be rolling Gooch in and out of the building.
We'll roll each other. We'll be like a binary sun.
My apartment in college was like 300 yards away from like the strip of bars on our campus. But in that 300 yards, there was a Cane's I had to walk by every single time, and it would stay up until 4. It was such an issue.
Is there a level up of an extra tender at the college campus Cane's you had?
I feel like there might have been.
Because when I was at Penn State in the fall, I went in, they leveled up for college kids. There's like a whole other one. It's unbelievable. There are just even more tenders. See, that's interesting because our office is very Chick-fil-A heavy. But now that Cane's is opening up, two very different things, obviously. Cane's is going to really take the market at Barstool headquarters in New York. I'm curious to see how that goes. But I will be. The McDonald's below me here, they serve a basket of fries here. I'm in Chicago right now. They do like the lot, which I feel like Morgan Spurlock is punching air somewhere, knowing that they basically brought back the supersized fry.
So you're in Wrigleyville, aren't
you?
Yeah,
I'm across.
You're next to I
asked for a view of the stadium, and I got a hearty no from the reception. She's like, "No, we can't do that." I'm like, "Okay, all right." I asked, gave it a try.
I've had drunk Canes there too. I know exactly which Canes that is.
stumbling on over. So we have in Chicago right now, but we'll talk a little movie news first.
All right, let's talk about 3Chi. We're now introducing the next evolution in ultra-pure cannabis products, Delta-9-0 by 3Chi. 3Chi Delta-9-0 products deliver a similar, yet smoother, stronger, and longer-lasting euphoria compared to traditional marijuana products. This high-quality and federally legal hemp-derived product raises the bar for what you should expect from a cannabis product in both effects and experience. We talk about 3Chi all the time. I am yet to try Delta-9-0, but I'm very excited for it. We use the products constantly. It's all around the office. I'm sure you can picture it in your mind with everything we got going on there. I've used the gummies, the cookies, the brownies, and also the Rice Krispie Treat, which I talk about all the time, which, again, their edibles are incredible. They're so good. Get your exclusive 10% discount on 3Chi Premium THC products by going to 3Chi.com. That's the number 3CHI.com. And use promo code Barstool10 to get 10% off your order today. Must be 21 or older to purchase. Please use responsibly.
A lot of movie news, actually. A lot of things going on. Actually, I'll start off because you guys talked about it on the Long Take last week. I Think You Should Leave. It was fucking hilarious. It was just so funny. I do think the driving crooner is my favorite sketch, though. I'm gonna rewatch this week. Watch my buddy Landon tomorrow night. He's in Chicago here. We'll see. What did you guys say was your favorite one?
I'll be honest, the fucking egg is really grown.
Just the one delivery. That was my number one pick, man.
It might be his best, which is insane. It might be his best delivery of all time. It's got a bush. What the hell?
That's all. I immediately thought of Ken Jack when I saw that one. That's a very, like if Ken Jack would have had, like, some, like, writing credits on that, I would have believed it. Like, the carts, that's very, like, fictional. Not to say that we were as funny as I Think You Should Leave, but we were not. That's very fictional debates. Of, like, it's like the egg has a bush. Like, that's exactly what I'd expect. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that
it's
one,
not,
the.
It's
the
not porn.
What else we had? The Tim Meadows wedding one was very funny. Tim Meadows wedding one was hysterical. The whole photo op thing. That one, what else we had? The Will Forte ponytail one, very funny. Yeah. The friend group pyramid scheme with
Will Forte bats at such a high fucking level. Will Forte is really a big can't miss guy in like roles like this. He does it with Tim and Eric.
The only sketch I've seen of that show is the one where Will Forte plays the baby.
That's another great one.
That's such a bad example for the show, in my opinion, too, because like that out of all of the first season is maybe my least favorite skit. And like, there's you got to watch the rest then. Oh, man,
you do. It's
knock them out.
It's an unfortunate binge, too, because I have for some reason when I finished, I was like, oh, I'm going to go back tomorrow and watch the rest. And I was like, oh, fuck, I watched all of them. It's quick to get through. The level of which I laughed, though, I've told you guys this, when the guy rolls down the window for the driving crew and says, I'm going to fucking kill you. I laughed so fucking hard.
It was really good.
Yeah, so
I went back and rewatched the Heidecker one, too, because all my friends just would not stop quoting that this week, and they just kept going, we're going to Club Aqua. They would turn to me and then during the night and be like, hear what happened at Club Aqua? The deck came.
Kim Kardashian's head came off.
All right. So other than that, let's talk news. Let's start with Spider-Man. This is actually really funny. In our interview with Jake Johnson, you'll hear it. The context isn't really there, so we'll explain it. He mentions how Spider-Verse would be very hard to do in live action, which is very true. It's like I just don't think it would translate quite as well. And while we were doing that, Amy Pascal like confirmed that they're doing a live action Miles Morales, which is not to say it's going to be live action, not to be the same exact thing. They have not said that. But they announced live action Miles Morales. Tom Holland, Spider-Man 4, are going to start filming early 2024, though we'll see. I don't know what the writer's strike is going to do to a lot of that stuff. Movies are not impacted quite as terribly as TV in the early stages of the writer's strike. Those can be changed and it's not that big of a deal. And then animated Spider-Gwen spinoff coming, quote unquote, sooner than you think, which I don't know when I think it's going to go, so I don't really have context on that. But thoughts on that, Ken, Jack, all those news items.
Yeah. I feel like overprotective of Miles Morales now as a character. Mm-hmm. Like I proactively want to gatekeep him as a character because of how good he is in these two Spider-Verse movies. In live action, going from anime to live action, and especially in the superhero genre, I feel so hard and so unfair because of how brilliant these two movies are. And then to go to like a live action one and have a guy you know, CGIing with tennis balls and a blue screen. Like, it's just, it's not going to feel exactly the same. You know what I mean? So that part of it is rough. Although at the same time, I think we talked about this recently too, just like Spider-Man is one of the most consistently well done superheroes out of all the superheroes that get like a trillion renditions. Like, he is most of the time do him very well. So I think like that I'm not as worried about him as I would be versus other characters. Anything animated, like series wise, like, that's gravy to me. I just like, I had started the first few episodes of Harley Quinn a while back, and I just restarted it again. So fucking funny, man. It's just so good. So it's just so easy to get into like the real imaginative part of the comic book world in the animated medium versus live action. It's just, it's not even close to the same when you try it that way. So more animated Spider-Man, the better, if you ask me.
I have a quick question, because I'm still kind of confused by the rights deals and all this stuff. When Amy Pascal says we're doing live action Miles Morales, is that a part of the MCU? I mean,
yeah,
they'll have to strike a deal.
Yeah, my guess is that it will be, but I do know that, like, from what I understand, I mean, I don't know. Like, I would also think that maybe there is a deal that we don't even really know about, like, because there's the whole Venom thing, right? Like, I don't know, but I will say, like, the only thing that's really concrete is that Tom Holland's Spider-Man is MCU. I mean, I would be stunned if Miles Morales is that they don't work that out.
I just remembered what Sony calls their little universe. It's the Sony Pictures universe of Marvel characters. The spunk.
Got to workshop that a little bit.
Yeah.
It's not great. We'll
get to it more in the review, but I'm with you, Ken Jack. These Spider-Verse movies have really, especially with how good this one was as a follow-up, it's making me wonder if the animated medium should be the preferred medium for these stories. It's like you can just do things you can't do in live action and make it look right. I'm excited for the animated stuff. The live action thing, I'm with you.
You can get away with weird. Right. I mean, we've talked about this plenty of times, more so you and Trill, Ken Jack, back when Trill's in the pod and you guys were more anime than I was and I started to get into it. But like, you talk about like Cowboy Bebop and stuff. Like, there's just things that don't work. And I'll quick spoiler, cover your ears, Spider-Verse, if you haven't seen it. Peter parked car. That doesn't work in live action. That's a very funny, so quick you'll miss it joke. And that's credit to Lord Miller, by the way, because that whole team, like, they are their jokes, it's quick. And we'll talk about that. But, like, that is just a thing that even if you did Peter parked car quick in a live action, it's, like, really off-putting. I don't – right? Maybe I'm wrong, but, like, it just seems like that wouldn't work.
No, dude, it would look like – it would have the same level of creepiness that all the live-action Disney remakes have. Where it's not that it doesn't look real. It's that there's this weird, uncanny valley, and you remove – so much of the colors and the textures that make the animations look really cool. I mean, we'll talk about it when we get into the review, but like, I think the biggest, you know, like, compliment you can give these Spider-Verse movies is I can't think of any movies period that look like them. And you can't really recapture that in live action.
Yeah. So we'll see live action Miles Morales. That's quite the fucking shoes to fill. The biggest shoes to fill are going to be the fucking kids who get recast as Harry Potter for that HBO series. But bless their souls already. But yeah, that'll be a tough one. Animated Spider-Gwen, all that. After that, this news is fucking bananas. I still can't fucking believe this. A Fast spin-off movie starring The Rock is in development. This is about a week old, this news. If you haven't seen this, though, this will baffle you likely. It's not considered Fast 11. Okay, so you're probably thinking to yourself, well, yeah, it's Hobbs and Shaw 2. It's not Hobbs and Shaw 2. It's Fast and Furious 10.5, which is kind of what Gooch said last week when we reviewed this movie. He's like, I think it'll be like a bridge, but like, it's also not. Why is it not just – the funny thing is like, they're set up so perfectly to have Hobbs come in and like kind of be the bridge to the next movie, but now it's a whole other thing. So really there aren't two movies left. There's another three movies left.
Also,
The Rock's post to announce this was no one in the world, by the way. I mean, like, you know, like, I'll say it myself, like, I'm a long-winded talker myself, but nobody was going to abuse the character count being expanded on Twitter more than The Rock.
Mm.
The longest
guy at that.
It was so long. It was so many paragraphs.
It was so just, I'm back. Like, which is funny because that's what the character was at the end of that movie. You're like, oh shit, this is sick. And then he was like, this some bitch going to pay. It's like, oh, fuck. God damn
it. I gotta throw another question out there. What changed? Because time must fly. Because wasn't it a year ago when Vin Diesel was like, Dwayne, go back to the
got over it. They both said, I think publicly, that they mended fences. Also,
okay, I did not know that. I did not, because I've been under the assumption that, right, exactly, it's all money. But I've lived under the assumption that they hated each other. So
I don't know what you think, Ken Jack, but I feel like this is a pretty obvious one too. He also, The Rock, just got absolutely fucking destroyed over Black Adam and the DC stuff.
Yeah, he needs a PR win, and I feel like in this case, being the bigger man versus Vin Diesel is kind of that. And obviously, like, this, he probably filmed this cameo like well before any of the Black Adam shit really came out or any of that. But still, at the same time, like, it's something he needs. And I remember I saw his TikTok recently it stuck with me. There's someone that was comparing like why The Rock hasn't been able to work the way Arnold Schwarzenegger did. And it's because Arnie was just so much more particular about the roles he picks. You know what I mean? Like, he picked directors that he knew were going to take risks, and it didn't always work. And then sometimes it really did work. But The Rock just has like this machine around him that only allows him to pick like the safest roles possible and the safest movies ever. And none of them take any risks. It's just like, this is a built to be safe and make money, and that's it. And it never works. And that's why he's not able to take that next step. And I think it's really true. I wish I had that TikTok on file or something, as if this is like fucking Rolodex.
People say that though, but like, hasn't The Rock's movies as a whole made more than Arnold's did? I mean, like,
I'm sure they did, but all of Arnold's movies are better, is the point here.
Okay. There's some shit.
The quality is so, I mean,
it's like a substantial gap.
Is like Rampage one of his top five rated movies on Rotten Tomatoes?
Something like that.
And like, all the Fast movies he's in will probably fill up a good chunk of that.
But even then, those aren't his movies. You know what I mean?
Pain and Gain would be up there. I'm trying to think of like, what is the...
But like, what's that on the level of like fucking Kindergarten Cop rating wise? Like, that's not...
Yeah, exactly.
That's what I mean here.
Okay. The Best of Arnold is amazing, but I bet if you look at the Rotten Tomatoes page, there's a lot of his movies that are not rated that high.
Yeah, he's been doing it a lot longer as well.
Yeah, of course. Now, for the record, Arnie's my guy. I was just a little counterpoint.
He took more risks. You won't find many The Rock movies that are rated below like a fucking 20, but you're not going to find any rated below above like an 80 or something. You know what I mean? And like, that's like kind of the goes with like the risk taking with that Arnie took. Or has taken. Don't go and count his 2000s pre Gray Davis against him, or whatever the fuck that guy's name was.
So, like, I mean, oh my god, the fucking internet's just freezing up. Moana's is number one, obviously.
Okay, yeah.
That makes sense.
Do you count Fighting with My Family?
No.
Because he was a cameo. No. He was absolutely, he played himself, but he kind of does in every movie. So
no, that doesn't count. That doesn't. But it doesn't.
He
that movie
did
doesn't count.
Literally play himself in that movie.
But even
but a that's okay, the so part of The Rock that's the best, though. That doesn't really work.
Let's keep in mind, none of these are his movies, though. Furious 7, not his movie. He's barely in it. The other guys, great role, but barely in
side
it.
Side character.
Fast 5. Okay, Jumanji, Welcome to the Jungle would be like the best lead he has, 76%.
Mm-hmm.
DC League of Super Pets. Was he the lead?
Not bad.
Okay, the lead
voice. No, he was one of the main voices.
Central Intelligence.
Dunk, no?
It's not many. Really not many. And then obviously
that's the thing. Like this,
I mean, the Terminator, Terminator 2, Total Recall, Predator, even Dark Fate is higher up there than a lot of The Rock's movies.
Yeah, well, there were a lot of Dark Fate defenders when that first came out.
Hmm.
Man, oh man.
That's the thing. He took a lot of swings. It didn't always work, but a lot of time did. Like, I would watch Commando right now over any movie The Rock has made.
Well,
you know what I mean?
Commando's fucking awesome.
It's fucking awesome. Exactly. And that was like, to a degree, more of a swing than Jumanji was for The Rock. You know what I mean?
Brother, you ain't getting any $7 production screening invites anytime soon now.
Yeah, so I'm so depressed about him and his ex-wife's company. They run together so
bizarre. Because he started with $7, do you see?
Yeah, we get it. We get it.
So that's
remember that. When I tricked him? Do you remember when I tricked him into tweeting a picture of Tom Cruise's fake ass?
Yeah, for Zoa, right?
Yeah, for Zoa with the big ass picture in the background. That was some poor intern. It wasn't actually him, but still, I like to think it was.
So Vin Diesel not expected to be in that movie. Also, this is not confirmed at all. But there was a very funny rumor going around that Vin Diesel was upset with how Jason Momoa played his character. He was upset that he stole the show, which is so funny. He was like he hammed it up too much, which was unarguable. Like I think unquestionably by most the best part of the movie.
Yeah.
And without Vin a Diesel doubt, best part.
Not happy about it.
Well, that's all anyone said. No one's came out of Fast 10 and was like, Vin Diesel, man, that guy rocked. He was so good in this one. No, everyone was just like, Jason Momoa stole it. He was the best. He's the best person there, which he was. By a significant margin, he was the best part of the movie.
Jason Momoa is just going to be dead in the first 5 minutes. Fast 11. Yeah.
Like Cena in the last one. Spoiler alert.
So that's that. Oppenheimer.
The fact that they had John Cena as Jacob in that last Fast movie where they were like, yeah, this character kind of sucks. So they just made him a different character, like a totally different person. Like they just turned him into – he was Peacemaker. They were just like, yeah, you're just going to play Peacemaker now.
I was in the back of a cab and he was on maybe Today Show or something and he kind of explained it. He's like, yeah, you know, now he's the fun uncle. I'm like, what? That's fucking crazy. But what a turn.
Such a stark transition. He was a supervillain. One movie ago, not even like a canonical like year before that.
He's the goofy uncle now, or has a station wagon. It's like, what the fuck?
Can you imagine that in like the fucking Joker in Dark Knight Rises is all of a sudden like the fun uncle of Damian Wayne? Like it just fucking makes no sense.
Oppenheimer rated R, first rated R for Christopher Nolan in 20 years, which is kind of crazy to think about. But I guess when you start to parse the fact he did Batman Begins in what, 2005? Like that isn't that isn't that crazy, but like I guess 20 years seems so much longer than it really is, which is nuts. But also apparently gonna be 3 hours and 9 seconds, whatever. Kind of expected something like that. I'm very excited for it. I don't think we have much else on that. I guess they say a bunch.
No, it's a 45-minute sex scene. These go together.
Oppenheimer, yeah, it's just him.
Just
him banging Emily Blunt. I've just become cum, the destroyer of pussy.
I just real quick jump. I had a friend of mine who said he doesn't think Oppenheimer domestically in its run will make over $100 million. That's insanity, right?
Yeah. There's probably one country it's not going to make a lot of money, I would imagine. But other than that, it's probably, I think it's going to make good margins.
You think it's going to bomb somewhere?
I'm curious. Hang on. Let's
rightfully bomb in here.
Let's just see.
Because he said Tenet made what, like $210 million, I think.
That was also COVID.
Yeah, right.
But this is rated R, and it is 3 hours.
Your friend is wrong. I looked for IMAX tickets for the first three nights of showings. It's booked every single showing.
The Prestige made 53. Come on. Memento was 2001. Not counting that. Yeah. That's it. Everything else made Insomnia 2002, but Tenet does not count.
A small movie though.
Yeah, Tenet doesn't count because it was COVID. The fact that it even made $58 million is kind of crazy.
Yeah,
I think a big thing too is much like Avatar, it's going to make a lot of money off premium tickets. They are pushing the IMAX thing on this hard.
Rightfully so.
That is a big fight, by the way. That is a big fight. Yeah, Tom Cruise apparently really wants the theater space because they come out a week or two before.
That's Paramount's fault. I don't know why they would do that.
Yeah, that is pretty fucking stupid.
Very dumb.
Yeah.
Although, like now that I'm thinking about it, I've been talking up how much I want Oppenheimer to keep their release date to line up with Barbie. Like, I would move Mission Impossible. I could wait for Mission Impossible another few weeks.
I don't think you can move it now. Like it's
you can't. But I am saying in the hypothetical world, like I think I would, so that I could just get that double release date, double IMAX it. Although Barbie's not going to be in IMAX, although that would be funny. And then go watch that. I would do it.
Speaking of Mission Impossible, I had a very awkward interaction this morning.
With who?
Oh yeah, who did you see?
Palm Clemente. Palm. I was just like, hey, I loved you in Guardians. She's like, oh, very nice. She's like, what's your name? I'm like, Bobby. And then before I could even finish saying my name, I was like, I'm also very excited for Mission Impossible.
Nice.
She was like, oh, thanks.
That was like me with Michael Van Gerwen. Both times I met him over the last week for darts. Yeah. We met him a second time going to that place that we pre-gamed at.
Shut up.
Fucking crazy. Dude, I swear to God, we're going in and he was coming out on no uniform with like his jersey over his back in one of those things and some assistant, I guess. And we're just like, Michael. And I showed him the shirt and he just like, didn't read it, obviously, but he was just like, yeah. And then he went and fucking won the whole thing. That crazy Dutch bastard. Won me a lot of money, too. Shout out Barcelona Sportsbook.
LeBron, Ronaldo, Michael Van Gerwen, most recognizable athletes in the world.
I did not to make this a darts convo, but that I think I drank like 5-6 White Claws at that fucking place. And
you want to tell them what happened?
Yeah, I don't know what happened exactly, but I was bombed. I was bombed out of my mind. So you tell how we what happened when we walked in. We actually sat down in our seats for darts.
We sat down in our seats and I just look over at Kinjak. He just has the Seamless app open the second we sat down in Madison Square Garden. He's just looking at food.
Dude, I sat down and I was like, I need to go home and eat something so bad. I left like an hour in. I got back. The delivery guy was already there. I ordered from a diner and I ordered a chicken Caesar salad wrap, a plain hamburger, and a side of beans. It was the most bizarre order I had ever seen in my life. I don't know how it happened. I didn't eat like half of it. That's why I only even knew it because I like went and looked at it the next day, sitting on my counter.
The drunk farts you were probably letting out the next day.
Yesterday it was misery. It was a fucking hazmat situation.
Who eats drunk beans?
I don't know. Why I think it was a mistake, like an earnest mistake on the ordering process. I should have got Stephen Shea's diner special fucking flounder stuffed with crab meat.
You were just drunk and you're like, this will be a funny bit that only I will see.
Exactly. Fuck, I wish I took a picture of it. I didn't even think about it. I probably have the order history Seamless.
Oh my God.
Feeling lucky? You should be. Meet the new Lucky One sweet tea from Miss Peaches, the vodka drink that's positively doing good. Made with real tea and real vodka, non-carbonated, 100 calories. And here's the scoop. Their new sweet tea is the only vodka-based sweet tea on the market. Simple ingredients in a smooth, full flavor that makes it taste just like the real sweet tea. Best part? Every can helps rescue dogs find their forever homes as they work to a goal of donating $1 million to dog rescues in 2026. So if you love true sweet tea, this one's a no-brainer. Pick up a Lucky One sweet tea today and give back one can at a time.
Uh-oh.
Computer's glitching out. Okay. Yeah, darts was something else, man.
MVG, man. Never doubt him.
Andy Muschietti.
Oh! Muschietti.
Who's directing The Flash, which is apparently the greatest thing ever made. He's tapped for James Gunn's DCU Batman film, The Brave and the Bold. The movie will follow Batman as he learns to live with his biological son, Damian Wayne. Interesting. If you needed any more proof that they think they have something special with The Flash, this would probably be it, I guess, right? That's a fucking big thing to give him.
Yeah,
hey, Andy. Andy, you like what you see? You like what you see right here, baby?
He's like Argentinian.
I also think he's just established himself as a good filmmaker as well. I mean, people forget the first It was a huge, huge success. So The Flash likely doing really well, and It 2 did well. Like, this is a guy who's kind of proven himself to be a bigger budget filmmaker. We'll see where it goes.
Yeah, he's a good adapter. You know what I mean? I feel like those are two different classes of directors, if that makes sense. Not that one is any better than the other. Because you always need people who are great at adapting different things. And I think that that's a good space for him to be in, especially in the comic book world where all you do is make adaptations of runs of previous stuff, like all of that. So very excited to see The Flash. Keep seeing little trailers and bits for it. CGI still doesn't look great. It looks very DC darkish, but other than that, very excited for it.
I really expect James Gunn just being one of those guys who, if he finds somebody he likes, you're in his crew. Like,
yeah.
And I guess Muschietti and Mrs. Muschietti, since they're, I guess, a team on The Flash, they're in the crew now. Love to see it. Yeah, but like you said, massive, massive hire. Batman film is like about as much as you can ask for.
Mm-hmm. And it's the Damien one, right?
Yeah, and I fucking hate Damien, but whatever.
I know very little.
He's so annoying. He's the worst Robin by far.
Who's his mom?
Talia.
Talia, like the...
Yeah, his really? Dad is, or his granddad is Ra's al Ghul.
You know what I had? I had popped on because it was on like the free TV channel on Samsung before earlier. Allied from Robert Zemeckis with what's her name, Madeline Courtyard, who played Talia al Ghul in Dark Knight Rises.
Yeah,
what a disappointing movie that was.
You want to talk about? You know how we always talk about the Eva Green, the film critics, like the film snobs. She's another one of those where the film community, man, they love her.
If you're a French actress with like a C cup, like you'll have film critics up your ass for the next like two decades being like, you're the most influential and powerful actress that I've ever seen in my entire life. And like their catalog is just like good. Like it's like very good, like just solid. It's fucking crazy how horny they are. And so horny, which is a good spin or segue too. So horny, in fact, that they still hated The Idol, which is just gives you a show to you how much the French that is. Hated The Idol, which shows you how horny that show really is.
I haven't watched it yet, but the people who I know have watched it have been like, it's like one of the horniest, wildest. It's not I don't mean in like a good way either.
I'll be honest. I watched it. I didn't think it was definitely horny and it's definitely vulgar, but compared to where my expectation level was, I was like, okay, not
we're only episode that. One.
And only it's only episode one.
Yeah.
One thing is very clear though. The Weeknd cannot act for shit.
No, not at all. Not
Abel,
at all.
Abel. Maybe the Weeknd.
Abel Tesfaye.
Abel Tesfaye. Yeah. The Weeknd. Abel Tesfaye now. When he played The Weeknd, he was
Oh, sorry. I was going to say, my sound keeps cutting off in the middle of this. I don't know why.
When he was in Uncut Gems, he was fine, but that was 3 minutes and he was playing himself.
True was The Weeknd.
Yeah. Here. Oh, my God. No.
I don't know if I'll watch it, honestly. Like, I think I might. I mean, I guess I'm here in hotels. Like, I'll why not? But my interest is not high on that.
Yeah.
Have there ever been any singer/pop star vanity projects that ended up being good? Does The Bodyguard count? That was good. But, like, I feel like every time a singer.
The actual movie Pop Star was very good.
Right. Yes. But that one had a head start, I feel like. But typically, I'm not even going to count something like A Star Is Born for Lady Gaga because she was already acting. Like I'm talking like the glitters of the world. I feel like they're just all bad.
So I was talking to Trill Ballins about the show yesterday, and he goes, episode 3, The Weeknd's character goes into a long monologue about he likes to get Weeknd at Bernie's, which is getting a blowjob and getting a blowjob and cum with a semi-soft dick. And then we went back and forth with this AI machine making The Weeknd sing songs. I wonder if I could play it. Hold on, let's see. I wonder if this works. Oh, wait, no, I gotta get my other headphones. Sorry, go ahead.
Download it, we'll slice it in. Brought to you by BetterHelp. Getting to know yourself can be a lifelong process, especially because always growing and changing how you cope with maybe trauma, traumatic events, things that maybe going on in your life. Everyone has a different way of doing it, but it's hard to figure that out if you're not talking to someone. And therapy is a great way to do that. Deepening your self-awareness, understanding of things that are going on. Sometimes we don't know what we want or why we react the way we do or how we should react or what's the best way to react to cope or just handle things. BetterHelp connects you with a licensed therapist who can take you on that journey of self-discovery from wherever you are. And that's the big thing. I don't like going to therapy, doing it online. Great. You can do chats, you can do phone calls, you can do video calls. You don't have to see anybody if you don't want to. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited for your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Discover your potential with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/light. BetterHelp, HELP.com/light. Get 10% off your first month. All right, let's start with Rupert Friend. We won't do Spider-Verse. We talked to Rupert Friend. He's got a show out now. He's also been in plenty of things, including one of our favorite things we've ever reviewed on this podcast, The Death of Stalin. We had a great time with Rupert Friend. Talked a little Obi-Wan as well. Talked a little Star Wars fandom. Here we go.
All right, we are joined in person by Rupert Friend. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
You complimented our digs here, which is nice because this office is a dump.
We spent the last three episodes shitting on it.
Yeah. So we're not going to do it today. The lights in front of us sometimes turn on randomly, okay. And it's so bright where you think there could be, they might be possessed.
Okay.
Yeah. So yeah, we won't do that to you.
Thank you.
We won't terrify you.
Kill a vampire or something. It's
lots to talk to you about today. But let's start out with High Desert, though. Yeah. Already out airing, I believe halfway through, if my numbers are correct, on Apple TV Plus, which has been pumping out amazing
great
shows.
Great stretch right now, for sure.
Left and right. This cast is great. You, Patricia Arquette, Matt Dillon, Christine Taylor, Brad Garrett. We'll talk about Brad Garrett in a bit. I'm going to be asked to do my Brad Garrett impression at some point.
We just interviewed Ray Romano probably like a month ago now, but we forced him to do his Brad Garrett impression for him. Good?
You'll find out. Enough to do for Ray Romano. Like that was, I was like, this is terrible. this is awful. But High Desert, really funny show. Awesome. It's this era of like, I guess like mysteries and like detective stuff with comedy mixed in. It's been kind of popping up more than we've seen in a long time. Maybe, I don't know if like Knives Out kind of started it, but what, especially also your character name, by the way, is just absolutely fantastic. Guru Bob is like, it sounds like a fake character name that we would have made up in this podcast. Like that alone gets us going. But what is it about this show that you can tell people listening that is absolutely worth diving in, just like all these other great shows on Apple TV Plus?
So it's got this kind of Coen Brothers vibe, right? Mm-hmm. So you just like Fargo or The Big Lebowski, you know, there are elements of torture and mystery, but it's got this dark comedy sort of tongue-in-cheek thing going on the whole way through. Patricia Arquette, the great Patricia Arquette, plays Peggy, who's mourning the loss of her mom, trying to come off prescription and recreational drugs, and she kind of acid trips her way across the desert. So it's definitely got this quite funky steampunk vibe. Mm-hmm. And there is, as you just mentioned, all those, plus Bernadette Peters. I mean, there's this incredible cast of kind of eccentrics, of which one of them is as you said, Guru Bob.
And all again, just, did you have any input in the character name Guru Bob? Or you just like, hey, you're auditioning for Guru Bob?
Guru Jeff. No, they when they sent in the name alone, I was just like, okay, who calls themselves Guru Bob? And the brilliant thing is, he's not a real guru in any way, shape, or form. He is not even self-professed. He was a small town news anchor who had an existential meltdown live on air and declared that everything was stupid, dropped acid, and dropped out. And the everything is stupid thing kind of went viral. And he got these kind of acolytes hanging out in his back garden in teepees taking acid. And they all thought he was this sort of profound prophet guy. And he didn't disabuse them of it. He has got zero to say. He's got zero spirituality. He's not even very smart. He became for them sort of a symbol of, I guess, you know, getting rid of the man kind of thing.
Did you say the best leaders are the ones that don't want to lead? So maybe Guru Bob was onto something.
Yeah, it's definitely a projected sort of leadership. Yeah. It's like, did you guys see The Life of Brian, the Monty Python?
Yeah, of course.
Remember they're all following him around.
He doesn't want them to follow
him. Yeah, and I'm like, I'm not, you know, the Messiah.
Stop saying that. Yeah. Yes, well, stop saying
right,
that.
We're all individuals.
Yes.
All that stuff. So he's kind of in that mold, but much stupider.
You know what's funny about that scene is none of the people in that crowd spoke English. They're all natives of North Tunisia. They had to like basically phonetically teach them how to say the chant together.
Oh, really?
So the whole group, like they were just like saying words they didn't totally get, but they were like in unison doing it. It was crazy.
That's funny. I love that film.
Directed by Jay Roach's episodes, who's done so many funny things. The Austin Power franchise.
Meet the Parents.
Did I say Austin Power franchise?
Austin Powers franchise.
You got the Austin Powers.
That's a whole different one. Meet the Parents, done more serious things, done Bombshell. What is it about, too, especially this being a dark comedy, where it has some more serious elements that tie into the comedy, a little darker than just a slapstick like a Meet the Parents or Austin Powers. What is it about someone like Jay Roach who can kind of bring both elements of that world?
Well, you hit it on the head, man. He's done some of the most seminal comedies of the last 20, 30 years, and then he's also done these Oscar-nominated, very politically driven dramas. So he has the capacity to do a complete like slip on a banana fart in your face moment, you know, a la Meet the Parents. And then he can dive into the real truth and meat of a scene. So what I loved about working with him, aside from the fact that he's such a great guy, is that he will root you in the truth of it. You know, for example, this isn't a spoiler, but your nipple is being cut off. Mm. That's not like a fake nipple. That actually is happening. But he'll also lean into the ludicrousness of a self-professed yogi trying to, you know, tie himself up in a yogic swing when he's got no idea what he's doing. And so the times on set, especially with Patricia and Matt Dillon, we were just allowed to riff and improvise, and it got sillier and sillier and sillier, and you're just trying to keep a straight face for a lot of it.
Mm-hmm. I love that. Every time I hear about one of those type of sets, it seems like the best. Like the ones where it's just the entire cast and crew just trying to stop themselves from cracking up.
Well, my favorite is that clip. It's an outtake from Eastbound and Down, and it's
Will Ferrell.
And, yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Down in my
You're a guy. We're talking about Will
Ferrell. You know, that thing is like the slum just slipped off. And the other guy, I think it's Craig Robertson.
Yeah.
He's like, he's trying really hard to, and then the other one's just saying, don't break.
Do you have like a don't break face that you have to make? I think everyone knows like when to,
right,
is that.
It's a weird, like, it's like this, but without my hands. It's like really hard. But of course you can't do that. So I end up, you'll find, like, if you ever see me like looking suddenly really interestedly at your socks, it's because I'm trying not to laugh.
I'll sometimes hit like, if it's a moment where I really can't laugh or shouldn't, like the fake yawn, maybe something.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one. That's a good one.
Or one, like one of those.
But you'll see, because the worst thing for breaking or corpsing or whatever is if you catch the eye, especially Patricia, because she'll just like, she's so fucking good. Sorry, you're allowed to swear.
Yeah, you can swear, yeah. Okay.
So she's so fucking good and Matt, that they'll just hold you because they know they've got you on the ropes, and then they start rope-a-doping you with it, and they'll just keep pushing it. And what you tend to notice is if you're a bad corpser, which, is that the word here, or you say breaking here?
You say it's breaking. Well, yeah. I like corpse. That sounds cool.
So of course, that's what I think they say in England. But breaking, so, and I'm a bad one for that. So I'll have to look just up, like at their hair or something, to hold it, because otherwise I'm done. And when I go, then it's 20 minutes. You may as well just all go and have a cup of coffee. Yeah. It's like, that's the end.
So I remember the first thing I saw you in was Homeland, which is obviously a very serious, more dramatic show.
Yeah, less of a barrel of laughs.
Definitely a little bit less of laughs. But then we obviously saw you in Death of Stalin, and you were hysterical in it. Oh, did that movie kind of like open up more comedic opportunities for you?
Definitely.
Like this, I guess?
Definitely. And that was the first time I'd gotten to kind of really have a go in that arena. Armando Iannucci directed that. Amazing. When he called to ask, you know, to do it. And it was... You know, he had me and Andrea Riseborough and Jason Isaacs. I think none of us had really done comedy before. And we all found out afterwards that we'd all said, are you sure? Because you've got, you know, Steve Buscemi, Jeffrey Tambor, some of the greatest.
Michael Palin,
for Christ's sakes. Mm-hmm. And what he did was he took a risk. And to me, that's what makes a great filmmaker. It's not saying, oh, you've done this before, do it again. It's saying, let's find out what it's like if we get someone who's never done this before. And what that meant for me when I said, you know, what's the sort of tone? And he said, I want you to do what you do, but take it up to 11, to quote another great film, obviously, Spinal Tap. Yeah. You know, and so, and again, free improvisation, the whole ice skating thing was just... I just said to the props guys, don't tell anyone, but can you find me a pair of ice skates? The whole scene was meant to be just standing on the side.
We're going to talk more about it. Don't worry.
So when they're playing the scene, it was meant to be me just talking away and things like that. And then I open the door and get out onto the thing, and I can hear Armando sniggering like a kid at a party behind the camera, but just with his hand doing keep rolling. And the poor hockey players did not know because we didn't rehearse or anything. Yeah. So the ludicrous thing that you see is just what happened. This is actually what happened, which makes it so fun.
And you're like bent over like you'd never skated before. You're just like slowly moving along the ice. It's so funny. Patricia Arquette's character Peggy is kind of like this train wreck character. Like, what do you think it is about those characters that kind of draw us in as audience members? And I know the first example that I thought of, because I started watching Shameless recently, which is also, there's an English version of that too. Like the character of Frank Gallagher, like characters like that, where they're just total train wrecks. We're just zoomed in on them. Like we love those guys. Why do you think that is?
I think because we've all got an inner train wreck, right? To a greater or lesser degree. And the degree to which we can keep it under wraps depends on whether we can sort of function in society.
Yeah.
So when you see like a Frank Gallagher or a Peggy in our show, there's a part of us all that goes, I feel like that on most days, mm-hmm. and I'm barely holding it together. So seeing someone, because what I love about them is they somehow, like Mr. Magoo, they sort of trip yeah. upwards.
Yeah, fail
so
up, they fail their way upwards.
They fail yep. that, they fail upwards. So even though Peggy is kind of a hot mess and Frank Gallagher's, I mean, a really hot mess, yeah. they somehow have love and they have friendship and they kind of get through life in a way that is very attractive. And we, I kind of want to hang out with them.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. All right, now you get to rate Jess Brad Garrett.
Yeah, I, it's not good.
On the spot. Well,
you're going to give a
Brad I mean, I'm just going to say it's right. it's not.
It's one word, basically.
Well, okay.
Well, I got to get into the character. Hold on.
Imagine you're 6'9".
Well, I was going to say, my Brad Garrett impression is just standing on this.
Very tall.
He's a bit. Ma, Ray. That's all
good.
I do.
That's right. Okay. He has a very distinct great. Voice.
I had a better Ray, but I was not doing my Ray for Ray Romano.
Why
not?
I tried it a little bit.
He liked it.
That's oh, absolutely. He's Ray Romano.
Yeah. Well, if you have any impressions of any characters I've done, I welcome it.
I don't think I'd be good at your fail son Stalin, like or
or Star Wars. I don't know.
Star Wars, it's just hello. It's like the scene where you pop up right. At the-
oh, we'll talk about that too. You're talking to massive me. Star Wars nerds. So
yeah, right.
Yeah, cool. But we gotta talk. Also, check out the High show Desert, on yeah. Apple TV Plus, High Desert. Check it out now, halfway through. So yeah. Binge a catch up. I think when this episode airs, I think there's one more out. So definitely check that out. But we got to talk a little more about Death of Stalin. I was pulling up while we were talking here in that last question about where we have it ranked. We have it as from the 2010s, our it was top 20 movie we saw in the 2010s, yeah. best comedy we saw in the 2010s. Wow. We saw it together at like 11:30 in the morning yeah. here in New York at a theater, the Lincoln Square, up yeah. way up.
It's like a geriatric district.
Yeah, it is. But York, it's like the number one theater in the country. So right. always packed every showing. There were people behind, not everyone in the theater. People knew what to expect. We knew what to expect. Yeah. Two people either behind or ahead of, or in front
They're
of
in
us.
They're in front of us, yeah.
The older, probably 70s, 80s. I think they were a little surprised early on in the movie. And then when like
holding a dead man's Steve, I believe when Steve Buscemi comes out and he starts speaking, it's like Brooklyn.
Yeah, and it's when they're standing around the dead body too specifically.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
it's the piss scene, right?
The piss
scene,
rolling the in piss. Scene,
right.
Yeah. Getting it all over them.
We talk about all the time. We'll never forget the woman shot her head back. She goes, oh my goodness. They really thought they were going to see a
historical
historical biopic.
This is how it all went down.
Exactly.
Yeah. The actions definitely got them like, what the hell is this? And then when they talked about piss, they were stunned. And I do think they left at some
they definitely
at one
left
point.
In
that's
the middle.
A result.
They made,
that's
yeah, a result. They made it a little further in. I don't know if they got to like the brain part. That might have been they
you're
were
not even a person. If the piss was too much, the brain was gonna
yeah.
be.
Yeah, we're not psychics, but I'm pretty sure we could tell why they were upset because it was not. Which I guess the title's fair. The yeah. Death of Stalin's pretty.
You just read it.
It does what it says on the tin. It is yeah. about the death of Stalin. And yeah, so piss jokes and brain.
Yeah, but when we saw it, I mean, it is. It's a movie I will suggest probably for the rest of my life to anybody if they want to watch a comedy, whether it's a scene or I mean your character. Just how ridiculous your character is. Jason Isaacs' character is absurd.
Jason Isaacs is so good.
The scene at the viewing or the memorial store where they just keep trading.
Steps in front of Tambor.
Yeah, when they keep trading places. It's truly one of the funny movies I've ever seen. How much, you talk about improv, how much of that was off the cuff? How much, like, because it just, again, it's Armando Iannucci's one of the great comedy minds we have.
Yeah.
Like, how funny did you know it was going to be going into it?
No, I had no idea because the script was a Bible. It was, you know, huge. And it was this weird mixture of almost everything in that is historically accurate. I don't know about rolling in piss and all things like that. But so many of those things actually happened. And then the whole accents thing, you know, Armando's idea was actually brilliant, which was we're in the Soviet Union. There were, you know, a dozen countries who all had different, you know, languages and accents. So, yeah, I'm going to have Brooklyn. Stalin was a Cockney. Mm-hmm. I mean, which is East London. It makes no sense at all. But it kind of does, actually. And then it was when we got there and, you know, the first day I was in my trailer and Paul Whitehouse, who's a brilliant British comedian who I grew up watching, knocks on my trailer door and says, because he sort of like talks like this. He's all right, young friend. How you doing? Nice to meet you. He said, yeah, nice to meet you. So your big scene today? I said, yep. You got a big scene in front of some of the greatest comedy minds ever to grace the silver screen, Steve Buscemi, Jeffrey Tambor. I said, yeah. He said, you're not known for comedy, are you? but the thing is, what he was really saying was, good luck and I wish you all the best. And we became super tight after that. When I got and did, you know, got into a scene and saw what was going down and how ridiculous it was, but how everyone was playing it so straight, I had an inkling that this might be funny. I just didn't know if it would make sense because it was so
right.
sort of layered and, you know, convoluted in a way. But then Jason with his medals and his
500
you know, coming and punching me out. I also remember there's a bit where I can't remember if it was in the script, but I said to Armando, you know, if I can do it, what if I spit on my own face?
So, I was going to ask that if that was real.
It was totally real. And Armando said, and I went into my trailer, lay on the floor.
Practicing.
And I sent him a video.
Literal spit takes.
And that was take one. It was the absolute
perfect one.
And everyone's like, is that CGI? And you can spit on your own face.
Real, I figured, I was like, this is probably real, but just in case, you never know.
No,
how many takes? How many literal spit takes you need to do to get it right?
Yeah.
That's it.
We also had a guy on set, a writer, whose only role was to come up with insults on the fly. So all that, you know, you're entirely made of hair and you're a
dream
human
job.
Testicle and all that stuff. Yeah. That was him just sort of flipping them out from the side.
That scene where you guys with the brain, you're just walking up like, you're not old. You're not even a person. Every time it gets me. The decision to have the actors with the regular accents, though, was that something that, like, were people a little hesitant at first? They were like, nah, people will get it.
It's Armando Iannucci, you know? So you just think, if this is your plan, then this is what we're doing, because he's made some of the greatest satires and political
big Veep
comedies
people over here.
Oh my God. Yeah, Veep. If also the movie's in the thick of it, in the loop. David Copperfield recently. And so anything, there's certain people like, and I just work with Wes Anderson, you know, and there are people who like that, who your idea, just you tell me, I'll commit and we'll go have fun.
I can't stress enough how there's just something about that movie that truly like lifts it above so many comedies from that era, because that decade too is pretty weak with comedies.
Yeah, I guess.
We've
more
talked about this.
Transferred over to TV than anything, yeah.
We've talked about this so many times, is that the 2000s were perfect.
Right.
And then after the 2000s, maybe it's because of, and we're Marvel fans, Superstar fans, maybe it's because of the big blockbusters and all that, that you just don't see the chances taken on comedies anymore.
Yeah.
But this is so perfect, and it's so different, and it's so mean.
And it kind of so dark.
And it takes you have to take this chance, right? Otherwise, like, I think that's the thing with this era. You have to take a chance like this with a comedy, otherwise you can't really make them.
You got to take a swing. And I feel like, also, who in America is going to watch some stodgy period film about some dictator unless there are piss jokes in it? And then you suddenly get people coming in, and by the end you're watching this brutal execution. People are being taken out of their beds in the middle of the night, and you suddenly go, what am I seeing? So to me, a comedy is only going to last the test of time if it's original. It's not going to work to do the same gags that we've seen a million times. And that's where Armando comes in.
You know what I'm thinking now is that if we were to get a comeback of an Edgar Wright, Simon Pegg, Nick Frost movie, you'd be so good in that.
I would love that.
Yeah,
I love those guys. Because Shaun of the Dead,
it's one of my
that
favorites.
Was great. That was really
And Hot
cool.
Fuzz, severely
he's doing,
underappreciated.
He's doing different
comparison.
Stuff. He did Baby Driver. He did Last Night Soba. He's got to do another one with him.
One last reuniting of the crew, of the main crew.
And maybe do that. Like Shaun of the Dead, you take a genre and you subvert it like that. That could be fun. I don't know what the genre would be.
Paddy Considine, who was in Death of Son, was also in Hot Fuzz, too. And he was so – the Andes, right?
Yeah.
It's him and Rafe – I forget his last name. But they were so funny. Oh, my gosh. Olivia Colman was in Hot Fuzz, which is insane to think.
It is one of those things where it's like, that's incredible.
I just thought of another bit with Paddy, you know, when they're recording the concert at the beginning. And the one guy comes in and he's just terrified and then just knocks himself out on the fire extinguisher. You just go, that is classic. Classic.
So great at acting.
And he makes them do it again, doesn't he? They have to record the whole symphony. Again, back in the
seats. And they're bringing in all like the people off the street so the acoustics stay the same. Oh, it's so good.
Kind of not crazy tight on time, but we got to flip a coin here of what we want to talk about first. And we are big Star Wars fans, but I think we got to ask you about Wes Anderson first.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I think we have Wes to Anderson. Because you know we can talk about Star Wars till our face turns blue, but we don't often.
My face was blue in that.
I do want to get to the makeup.
Covered in 20 pounds of makeup,
but
prosthetics.
We don't. I feel like we don't often talk to people who are in a Wes, especially very recently in a Wes Anderson movie. So you're in Asteroid City, which comes out.
June 23rd.
Yeah, very, very soon.
Well, in New York, June 16th. We get it.
Oh, there you go.
Early,
So go check out Asteroid City. very excited for that. We're big Wes Anderson fans. But what is it on a set, in a Wes Anderson set, do you feel the Wes Andersonism? Like, do you feel as...
You feel like you're in the center of a synchronous shot, right, like a very like, symmetrical shot.
Does it feel as that way, the same way as you see it on the screen?
Wes permeates every atom of every frame, and it's delightful. It's like stepping inside his mind.
Because you were in French Dispatch in a small... And that was way different, because it was... It was a couple different stories where this is one thing. Like, is it even more so when you're in the movie and in a bigger role? You're just like, this is...
Because here's the thing, you know, as you said, French Dispatch was, I think, three acts and how many stories interwoven. This is effectively like a quarantine... It is a quarantine situation. So there's one city, Asteroid City, where a group of misfits are quarantined who don't know each other and kind of what happens there, and then this, you know, random event happens, which I don't know if I can spoil or not, so I won't, but effectively he built Asteroid City in the middle of Spain. He recreated a kind of Looney Tunes 1955 Americana. So when you're there, you're there. There's no green screens. It was 450,000 tons of dirt trucked in to make it feel like Arizona or something. Mm-hmm. You know, the mountains were carved out of some kind of material. The cacti who all disappear into the distance. So you're inside that world for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And dressed in costume, no trailers, no downtime or assistance or any of that kind of usual movie crap. It's just this big group of wonderful eccentrics telling this story. Mm-hmm. And everything, you know, obviously he has a say in all of it. So the costumes and the sets and everything. So you just feel, like you've inhabited his imagination for, it was about 3 months in the end.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, you'll see that translates to the screen too, especially when everything's very practical. Like you tell the actors feel like they're part of the world, because then we feel like we're part of it versus being, you know, acting against tennis balls or whatever.
Did you find yourself on the set wrap that you were doing specific things in very like neat, organized, symmetrical ways? were you placing things down on the counter?
No, I mean, it was probably the other way, because we all lived together. It was quarantine. It was, you know, COVID and all that. So we lived together in a bubble in a converted monastery in Spain, having dinner together every night at these long tables. So you'd always find yourself next to whoever was in the most recently, you know, whichever actor had come in to do their bit. You suddenly got Willem Dafoe and Jeff Goldblum one night, and then Tom Hanks and Scarlett the other night. And it was just a big old party every night, to be honest.
That is, even if it wasn't COVID, that just sounds like the world you live in. Like long tables and everyone's that is unbelievable.
Yeah.
Do you think you're part of his crew now? Because Wes Anderson is a guy that runs with a crew. He does a lot of the same actors and the same things.
Yeah.
And you've now done two movies in a row with him.
Yeah.
And he is one of two crews that I think are the best to be a part of. It's him and Adam Sandler. Adam Sandler has his guys.
Yeah,
if you're one of his guys, you're going on vacation.
Adam Sandler's crew, though, you're
you're getting paid well.
We love Adam Sandler.
We're big Adam Sandler guys.
Yeah.
You would just go and sit there and maybe do a scene or two, but you're drinking like Mai Tais on the beach.
Mai Tais in Maui and to record some video or movie where it's like
you might have to fart for a second or two, but otherwise you're mostly
Adam Sandler and his wife like Bar Raffaelli or some shit. Gets like the.
I've got to put that on the bucket list then, because I think the experience of making a film can be as important as the film, right? So Adam clearly knows that. Wes definitely knows that. And I think Wes knows that it translates. Mm-hmm. So you get this sense of company, of a gang, of a crew, you know? And it is. It's a joy to be a part of it, really.
You'd automatically be a villain in any Adam Sandler movie, though.
Yeah,
like, anyone British, like that's not even...
I know.
You wouldn't even have an option.
And he would give you the dumbest name. He would give you it'd be like Rupert Cumberschmatch or some shit.
That would be
the dumbest, the most stereotypical English name.
I'd still do it, though.
Yeah. Oh, yes, you should. Star Wars 2, before we get to our quick rapid fire thing to end it. You went through all this makeup, all this stuff, your character.
45 pounds of armor.
Yeah.
Stabs and dies, I think, three or four episodes in?
Yeah.
And then you did something. You went up, which I don't know why they let you do it. I don't know why you agreed to do it. You went on Kimmel in the middle of it before your character comes back. And he's just interrogating you. Just like, you come back, right? Like, why are you here if you're... He's basically... I think he said that. Why would you be here if you don't return? How inside you... Because we've interviewed plenty of people in like various Star Wars stuff. Like, we interviewed Katie Sackhoff, who's in Mandalorian.
Yeah, yeah.
Kimmel's son is also Mandalorian. Yeah, Jimmy Kimmel's kid is like the little kid Mandalorian and all.
So we've done
he was like the Spanish Inquisition. He was not giving it up, but I was like, well, we can do this all day.
I mean, but like, did you Or did you like mentally prepare for that? Because that's it's one thing to go in before the show, but to go in the middle when you have to be like, I'm dead.
Yeah.
That's got to be a little terrifying. You're like, I can't fuck this up.
Yeah. I mean, he's such a kind of good person to sort of bounce shit with. I realized that as soon as the thing opened, that was going to be his like agenda.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, okay, you have your motivation. I have mine. Let's dance. And in the end, it was such fun. And we ended up just kind of sparring. But yeah, and he's a super fan as well.
Yes.
So it was a sort of badly hidden secret that I was probably not dead.
Right.
It's too big of a character. So
big fans of the show were like, come on, he's got to come back. Like, we watched Rebel. We watched Clone Wars. Like, we know. Like,
well, there's all of this actual canon as well.
Yes.
So, right. But still, it's... Can't, I mean, we always joke, there's Bob Iger sitting up there or some. I guess it'd be someone different at the time. He's back, but just with a sniper point, like, don't fuck up.
Don't say a word.
Don't
say a word. Yeah. There's an electric pad under my seat. Exactly.
Like, yeah, like a shock collar underneath your shirt. All right. We want to do something we call it six pack. It's six pack of rapid fire questions to end us out.
Okay.
First one being, how many times do you think Americans have been surprised to learn that you're English?
I would say most times. That's the biggest one. Until I do that Adam Sandler movie, and then everyone will know that I'm English.
You were, well, we just talked about one, Pride and Prejudice. We talked about Matthew McFadyen.
No one understands
him. And now in our, like, in just American pop culture, he is Tom from Succession, who is so American.
But also, how about that movie? You've got Tom from Succession, Peter Quinn from Homeland, Kelly Riley is in, you know, the Western thing that I can never remember the name of. I feel like there's like a bunch of Rosamund Pike. They're all in these great TV shows, and I think most of them do Americans.
Yeah. Christian Bale, another great example. Seemingly always plays an American. People are still,
every time he wins an award,
surprised.
Just American social media is like, you're shitting me.
I know.
He's not Bruce Wayne.
Like, I know. Yeah, I know. To be honest, it's kind of, it's cool. It means that you've done something right. You know.
Yeah, I mean, the opposite end of that is like, worst American actor. Yeah, it's pretty good.
I would prefer it than that.
What was your weirdest fan experience so far?
I mean, I did a couple of conferences after the Star Wars thing, and I actually really liked meeting the fans because they just have such love for it. And I learned things that I didn't know about the character and the world, and like really interesting, quite obscure facts. And someone came fully done as the Grand Inquisitor. And I had to hand it to her because she stuck things on her face for the cheek pieces, and she'd got earmuffs, and she'd done the head. And I was like, this is a level of commitment that I don't think even I have, to be honest.
Yeah, we're big fans. My walls are lined with Star Wars, but
yeah.
There is no fan base crazier than Star Wars fans. So
they are passionate.
And that's one way of putting it.
A lot of them, nearly all of them, just came up and said, welcome to the family. And
oh, that's
really
cool.
Moved.
Yeah, it's neat.
It's like, I was the new guy, and I know it was quite sort of controversial and all that stuff. And the idea that people were saying, you know, ignore the haters. We love what you're doing. Thanks.
You'll have like two groups of people, though. It'll be the people like that who are really nice and welcome. The other people being like, the Grand Inquisitor's head is on the wrong dimension plane by this many degrees.
It's tricky because I had no way to make my head any
right.
Get advice, you know, get a workbench. And, you know, so it was tricky because I try my hardest to do a good job. But there are certain things such as the dimensions of my own body that even I am unable to change.
Yeah. What's an English food that more Americans should try? Because it's kind of like a thing in America. They like to make fun of English for their food.
Yeah, I mean, English food, thankfully, is better than it was. I have a huge soft spot for the beer, which would strike, I think, an American as really weird because it's flat, there's no fizz, it's brown, and it's warm.
That wasn't a good pitch.
No, I know. And when I describe it that way, and people are like, why on earth would you want that? You've got to remember, it's not that hot in England, so the cold beer thing doesn't need to happen. But one of those on a warm afternoon with a packet of peanuts, you're in heaven.
I was going to say, it sounds like grog or something.
Yeah, it's got one of those oldie-timey qualities to it. And you imagine it's pissing down with rain, you're freezing cold. You know, it's England, and you do not want anything more cold in your system.
What's a role that you auditioned for, really wanted, but didn't get? Every actor has at least one of these. I have multiple denials, but like, what's the one they really wish you got?
Do you know what? I haven't got one. Certainly not one that's coming to mind. I mean, there's the... I was asked to screen test for Bond and said no for various reasons. I was very, very young. And I thought that I was too young and I would stink it up. And I would be the Bond that ruined it, you know, and everyone would sort of think, That is
a lot of pressure.
Yeah, and I love Bond. So to me, it was like I was 22 and it was I'd never been kissed sort of thing. And I just thought I got to go around the block a few more times to play.
Interesting. Bond does get kissed a lot.
That can't be easy to say no to, though. That's got to be.
Weirdly, I just had too much respect for the franchise. I just thought I want to watch great Bond films. I don't want to be the guy who makes the shitty one. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't want to be.
Well, how about now? Because they're looking for another one now.
Well, they know where I am.
There you go.
Yeah. Now I'm not going to fuck. Yeah.
So pick one. The other gets erased forever. Indiana Jones or The Godfather? I've read that both of these have very special Jesus places Christ. In your heart.
The other one is erased forever?
Yes. From history forever. So it's not as if you can't. You just can't watch it. It never existed.
And do you mean the one movie or the entire trilogy? You have to pick
the entirety of it.
Can I get rid of the crap one that was done just before this one?
No, you can only pick the good trilogy.
The first three.
The first three of each. And they're erased permanently.
Oh my God, man. That is the hardest question I think I've ever been asked. Because here's the thing. If you erase Godfather, then because Indiana Jones works for every age. So you get to give that to mm-hmm. your kids and the kids' kids and all that. But Godfather is one of the greatest movies ever made. So I'm going to erase the Godfather. I'm sorry.
Erase the Godfather?
Just, yeah.
I read that Indiana Jones almost turned you into an archaeologist.
Yeah, but then I realized that was really actually quite
pretty
dull.
Tough.
Yeah. What I really wanted to do is hang off tanks and punch out Nazis.
I can just pretend to do this in something maybe.
In a different movie.
And then there was that realization and here we are.
Yeah. We'll have you playing like Monty in no time. Like a very action version of Monty just beating up Nazis in North Africa.
That's it.
You actually have the fit for it right now.
That's
you have
it.
Full camo and everything.
That. I'm doing that whole thing.
Can you be an investor for my Vietnamese restaurant idea?
I love pho. So
friend or pho?
See, he likes
he's
it.
He's in. He's so in. No one's more in than him right now.
You didn't want to fuck up Bond, but do you want to waste all your money in a restaurant business venture?
I want to sink it into friend or pho. Oh my God, that's brilliant. I've heard some friend jokes, and that's the best one.
That's
yet.
A good one,
that's
yeah.
That's a good one. I'm
job is
it.
Done.
There it is. Yeah. He has to be your henchman in an Adam Sandler movie, though.
That's the payoff.
Well, so here's a little Death of Stalin factoid, is that my henchman wasn't in the script. It was a pitch I made to Armando. The idea that he's so stupid and such a liability that he has a literal minder. Yeah. And so that scene where I'm getting the gun and can't get it, that we literally ran out the clock on that. And it was a genius because, all of the cast just lined up and just watched and they kept rolling and kept rolling and we kept going. And then Riseborough just goes, that was the most perfect little cough. And I think someone told me, I haven't seen the film in a long time, she actually looks straight down the barrel of the camera when she does it, which is such a weird thing. But
really, for a millisecond, that works.
If I didn't name it, not if I needed another reason to rewatch the movie.
Yeah.
I think she does. But that whole the whole idea of having a minder was a pitch, and they've got this great guy to do it. And
yeah, he's one of my favorite creepy actors. He has the perfect creepy face.
But he was so good at playing this kind of weird mixture of, I'm so sorry about my charge, and being authoritarian, but also he works for me. I loved all that.
It was so good.
Oh my God. High Desert. Mm-hmm. Death of Stalin. If you've for some reason never seen it, listen to this podcast. That's weird. We've talked about it so much over the last 5 years of this podcast. And then we'll throw in Asteroid City too. Make sure to check it out. We're very excited about that.
Yeah.
So much good stuff. Thank you so much. This is an absolute pleasure getting to talk to you.
Thanks.
Hope we get to see you again.
Yeah.
Likewise. Maybe for an Adam Sandler movie.
I'll send you the term sheet for the restaurant.
Yeah,
later.
Or for your restaurant
or the
business.
Opening a friend of fun. Two for one on Wednesdays. Two for one.
Thank you so much.
All right, let's talk about Rocket Money. Do you know how much money you're spending on subscriptions every month? Not a lot of Americans do. Well, you know what? You need Rocket Money. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps you lower all of your bills all in one place. Over 80% of people have subscriptions that they forgot about, and chances are you're one of them. Like that Starz app that you got just to watch one show, or a free gaming trial that you never actually used. Rocket Money will quickly and easily find your subscriptions for you. And if any of you don't want to pay for anymore, just hit cancel. And then Rocket Money will cancel it for you. It's that easy. Rocket Money also helps you find and manage all of your finances in one place and automatically categorize your expenses so that you can easily track your budget in real time. And you can get alerted if anything looks off. Over 3 million people have used Rocket Money and saving the average person up to $720 per year. I used Rocket Money, helped me find a Microsoft subscription for Xbox that I haven't been using since 2014, something like that. Helped me cancel it. I was losing like $16 a month. It's kind of embarrassing in retrospect. But I didn't want to have to deal with all the customer service, and Rocket Money does all that stuff for you. Stop throwing your money away, cancel unwanted subscriptions, and manage your expenses the easy way by going to rocketmoney.com/lights. That's rocketmoney.com/lights, rocketmoney.com/lights.
Big thanks to Rupert Friend. What a nice man. What a lovely man.
His face lit up when you guys brought up Death of Stalin.
Yeah, he was very excited to talk about that
movie.
It was
as if he'd never been talked about.
It was like no one had ever asked him about
it. It was cool to tell him the story, because that's one of mine and Ken Jack's favorite stories to tell on this podcast, is when we went and saw Death of Stalin and the old people in front of us thought it was a real fucking biopic. And then when the piss scene happens, they're just like, oh my God. It's like one of our favorite fucking like moments, going to our theater in New York, the Lincoln Square one. Second only to when Ken Jack ripped ass during I Feel Pretty with Amy Schumer.
I Feel Pretty. I was trying to remember. Yeah. Dude, the MTS theater. I promised that flip. Like I was getting like a fucking OBGYN exam. Like my legs were fucking out. I was getting my ass eaten and just fucking ripped it. Echoed down the halls right back to Amy Schumer's face. Here, I sent you guys the clip. one of you play it unmuted just so we could I want you guys to be able to hear the listeners to be able to hear too. I'm always having crazy sex, baby. You know me, I'm the weekend. I'm always having crazy sex, baby. I need to come so bad. I'm gonna come. I can take it anymore, baby. I'm gonna fall for bed, not because I'm just so horny.
Jesus Christ. I love that.
Yeah,
spot on.
The AI voices are a blast.
That is AI good. Bad. Don't forget. AI Apple goggles. Bad. New Apple goggles bad.
Oh, fuck. Look, I know people don't like AI musicians and stuff, and it's bad, but I do get a kick out of I get a pretty good kick out of like having musicians sing stupid fucking things. I think that should be acceptable.
Yeah.
I think that should be fair.
Yeah. Yeah, sure. Sure. If you're Rex Chapman. Feels like something he tweets about.
Excuse me, a Kentucky's own Rex Chapman, my friend.
We do not claim that, man.
Okay.
Ooh.
Who's that? Struck a nerve there.
Yeah.
Did you make the super regional? What happened on college baseball, Kentucky? I know you're a big college baseball fan, Gooch.
No clue.
Okay. Next up, another interview, then we're going to do a review. Jake Johnson plays Peter B. Parker, many other roles as well. I always love when we have someone in for a second or third time. We talked to Jake Johnson. Here is the interview.
All right. We are joined for the second time by Jake Johnson. How are we doing? How's everything going?
Going great, gentlemen. How you guys doing?
I think we're good. I think we talked to you like probably around like mid-spring last year, I think.
Right before Minx.
Okay. But now we're talking about Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse, the sequel to the Oscar-winning movie.
Yeah.
A movie that should have been nominated for Best Picture. It wasn't, because the Academy's kind of lame. One of the best movies probably the last 10 years or so. We saw it last night. We hated it. It sucked. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, it sucked. It's really awkward.
It was ass. No,
so
it was
awkward
amazing.
To watch this now.
Were you guys at the premiere? Are you guys in L.A.?
Or did
New York one?
No, we were sitting in three of the least comfortable chairs in a theater here in New York City. But that's just we're not like small guys. Yeah, we're not. But that should speak volumes to how much we loved it.
It's a wild movie, right?
It is. Yeah. Oh, my God. It is. Wild. And because you're kind of wondering, too. You're like, because they warn you, like, don't spoil it. Mm-hmm. Lord and Miller come on before, like, hey, you know, keep secrets. And like, there's a couple great things that pop up. Like it's so often nowadays. Sorry to go on like a soapbox here. When you hear that, it's like, oh, it's just cameos. Just as no, it's like the story is just you don't know where it's going to turn. You don't know what to expect. This movie, it's tough to live up to hype, but I like it lives up to hype. When did you? I guess I'll ask you that first. When did you get your first full watch of it?
About 2 weeks ago.
So how much of it did you know, like story-wise?
Nothing. So the actors in this movie are just as in the dark as everyone else. When you go in there, they never send you a script. You get your scenes, but they don't even send them to you before. So I'll get word, you know, I've got to record. Their availability is on Thursday next week. They're always four-hour sessions. When you get there, all the pages are in front of you. But as soon as you get there, you're recorded, so you're not reading ahead. So it's always trying to play catch up, and there's always moments in the middle of the read you'll go like, wait, what is happening? And they're like, okay. And then one of the directors or Phil will then paint the whole picture, but you never quite know what's going on.
Mm-hmm. They have operating like a fucking like terrorist cell to make sure that nobody gets any, too much information.
They're just using the voice. Well, at this point, just use AI then.
We won't spoil anything. This interview is airing after the weekend. So I would imagine most people watching it, like we're about to do our review of it. So like we won't spoil anything, but if you've watched it, you know where Jake's character is in the movie, what the character does in some pretty big scenes, big moments. But like that has to be even crazier, because maybe if you're on set in a live action, it's one thing. Like you can maybe even accidentally see what's gonna happen next. But for you, it truly is like you're in, like, how much of it are you looking at in front of you? Like, is it like previs? Is it just maybe some rough stuff? It can't be anything that concrete, really, too.
Nothing. I mean, every once in a while, they'll show a scratch animation just so you can try to sync certain things up. But they're not afraid to, if they really like something that happens in the booth, they'll change the animation around that. So the truth is, when, you know, at least for me, when I go watch these movies, I'm no different than an audience member. Like, sure, it's my voice, but we've recorded it so many times that they have total control of what they want to do with it. And when I'm in a movie or a TV show that's live action, you really do feel part of the creation of it. You're part of the media. You're in the kitchen with them. So you know what it's going to be. On this, when I watched it about a week ago, and even last night at the premiere is the second time I saw it, there's so much new stuff to me that I didn't get the first time. It's a movie that it's so intense and it's so rich and there's so much happening, and I'm really slow in 45. I think I need to watch it a couple more times to like fully get it.
Oh, this is a big, like, this is a
rewatch movie.
It's a pause movie. Like, I'm excited to get to
big time.
And just, exactly, and, you know,
kind of, it's just a pause movie. Is right.
That, again, we don't want to talk too much spoiler, but I like the way that you just said intensity, because I would say the final moments of that movie, you can feel it. You're like, fuck. You're like, this, like, X is about to happen. Like, this, not like Triple, it's not Xander Cage, but like this thing is about to happen. You're like, holy shit.
And the score is so good.
So good. Oh my God.
Obviously the animation, even if it's not about Spider-Man and you care about that, let's say it's about a new IP and you've never heard it. Just the animation alone is worth the price.
Right.
It is spectacular. When you're looking at backdrops, they look like paintings. And how the colors change throughout scenes to reflect emotions. I was doing press with Haley, and she said that they pitched her that her color scheme for her stuff is going to be like a mood ring. And it will change as she changes. That is wild. I'm like, and then you see it and you're like, she's talking to her dad. And in one edit of the dad, there's one color palette. It goes back to Haley. It comes back and there's a totally different. I'm like, yeah, that's you. You know, when you pitch it, like I pitched an animation show years ago. And one of the things the executive says, always say, like their like kind of go-to question, you know, is why make this animation? And in watching that movie, I understood that question for the first time. Where I'm like, oh yeah, you can't do this one live action.
Right.
Yeah.
You can't manipulate live action the way every single corner of every moment has, you know, thought and color. And I was like, this is, you know, honestly, really well. I want it to be like, you know, just really well job. I mean, it's 5 years of hard work and you guys did it.
They somehow leveled up, right, Kenjack? Like, I know Kenjack and I talked about when we left the theater, and I don't know if we mentioned this to each other, but I mean, I put it in my tweet. I cannot think of a better looking animated movie I've ever seen.
I mean, visually, I think it's the best movie that I've ever. I'm like, I left the theater last night and my head hurt a little. But it really does. Like, it's an actual,
you know, in a good way.
In a good way. Yeah. But it feels like an experience. Like every once in a while you go like to some sort of thing and you're like, man, like that was so much to take in through like sound and visuals, and they take you on a ride. And I'm like, it's really impressive.
Yeah. And I think like one of the big things, at least that we felt coming out of it, like I felt like,
this concept, right, it's so huge. It's like a massive scale sort of thing. But at the same time, the story is so intimate. It's got like a really good, like genuine heart to it. Mm-hmm. And all at the same time, it still managed to navigate like a multiverse, which is something like they've been trying to play with in
live action superhero movies, but they've been kind of struggling to nail. And I think you guys totally nailed it. I mean, the multiverse stuff makes it look easy. And like you mentioned, do you think the animated medium really helps you guys there?
I think 100%. I personally think a lot of the CGI stuff looks kind of goofy in movies. And even the one where it's like, it's really good, it feels like you're all of a sudden in a movie with actors. And then all of a sudden it gets a little bit off for me. And sometimes it's really well done where you'll be like, oh, this moment is perfect. But what's nice about animation is you don't have to judge or question anything because it's starting in that world. So you're just allowed to almost kind of play make-believe visually the whole time. So I wouldn't want to see this franchise like this in live action.
Mm-hmm.
Like the idea of jumping around, I'm like, part of the fun of it, and I don't want to spoil any of this stuff, but when they're like jumping to different universes, like I think that's really fun. And visually, that's kind of the fun of animation. You can go anywhere.
Mm-hmm. And like the limit is kind of your imagination instead of there being actual physical constraints to what you can do with practical or even CGI. You know what I mean? There's only so many tennis balls in the world.
Just compared to how many failed anime adaptations in live action there have been. Like every time they do it, it just doesn't work because there's just that one little boundary that, and even if it's like it could be a small thing in a fight, like a kick or the way something, just can't do it. You just can't do it.
And once you get thrown off for a second, it kind of breaks it. Mm-hmm. Part of the fun is you have to be in the whole ride, and animation helps it. I think, you know, honestly, I think it's kind of a perfect franchise for Lord and Miller to kind of helm, especially with their background in animation, but also with live action and comedy and action and, you know, weirdness, for lack of a better word. But like, it just kind of adds up. I'm still processing it the kind of same as everybody else's, but it's a really wild number two. And I honestly, I can't imagine what they're going to do with three.
Where are you in the production process on that? Have you recorded your lines yet?
I don't know if I'm allowed to say anything. I got in trouble earlier for mentioning something about one of the surprises in this thing when I was doing the junket. So,
Okay, fair.
I'm not saying anything.
Hey, you might be dead too, your character. I'm not going to spoil. That's okay.
Not spoiling anything. I think part of the fun of this one is for people to see it and get everything that everybody gets out of the first time, and so I don't want to ruin anything for anybody.
Which is so, it's so funny seeing that, because like they've been very protective of this, and like again, I'll know it's a lot of times nowadays it's cameos and stuff, but it's not just like cameos and things. They're talking about the story itself. But there was a movie that came out recently. The new Fast and Furious came out, and we were like, there was a tweet, like a publication. They just leaked who was in the post credit scene as a cameo. We're like, that kind of defeats the purpose of going to see it. You're getting in trouble for like an off the hand comment. Now other movies are just like straight up spoiling it, like before it even comes out. Like,
just come to the movie, spend your money.
And watching on multiple passes too. Like you were saying before, it's like I want to watch this again with subtitles. I want to watch it again like in slow motion. I want to watch it again like all sorts of different ways.
You know because I've now seen it twice in the theater with a group of people, and people react in a certain way and they laugh in a certain way and you feel the intensity together. I want to watch this alone at home.
Mm.
Where it's like, I want to control the sound. I want to like be able to stop. There are certain sequences that like things move fast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And like, I want to, you know, not to sound again like too much of an old man, but I want to watch this in phases. Be like, watch 45 minutes, take a break.
Like episodes.
Like I want to stream it. I want to do it like it's a 2 hours and 15 minutes. I want to do it in like three chunks.
Like little mini series, yeah.
Like a little mini series. That's how I want to experience it.
I want you to promise us that on the red carpet for the next one, whether you're in it or not, we know you'll be there. You turn to Lord and Miller and be like, you know, I think the last one's better as a mini series. You know, I really do.
You guys really fucked this up, man. Making this a movie, you really screwed the pooch here with one of the highest. It's already tracking for like $200 million. You guys screwed this up.
Is it tracking high?
It's tracking high, not 200. It was tracking very high.
I think Phil Lord and Chris Miller are, you know, I don't like to use the term genius because who knows what any of that means, but they're just playing at a much higher level. If it's sports, you know, they're LeBron or they're Jordan. They're the rest of us are in the league, and it's nice to be in the league. And then every once in a while, you're next to somebody and you're like, we're in the same league? We're both in like Bulls jerseys?
Yeah.
And so what's funny about them, though, is they're humble and normal guys. And after the first screening I saw, you know, I get home and Phil texts me. We're just, you know, texting bits back and forth. And then he writes, like, any ideas or notes or anything I should try to figure out? We still have a little bit of time. And I'm like, it honestly felt like Jordan being like, what do you think of my mid-range game? It's like, whatever you want to do, I would just keep playing however you like to play.
Don't listen to me. You shouldn't
whatever,
ask me for anything.
Whatever you think you should do, you should keep doing. And, thank you for including me.
Love that.
I mean, it is kind of crazy when you talk about Lord and Miller too, like the things they've had their hands in that are successful. Yeah. When you really break it down, a movie reboot of 21 Jump Street, mm-hmm. two of them
should not have worked at all. Which, amazing.
By the way, when I first heard of that one, because I did a bit as the principal in it.
Oh, yeah. Last time we had you on, we talked about it. You have maybe top five funniest line in the movie.
Yeah, thanks.
When you talk about punch a little.
Yeah,
But I remember, because, you know, Jonah is an old friend. And I remember when I got word on that one, my first thought was like, they're redoing 21 Jump Street. Like, 21 Jump Street is kind of like, it wasn't that the thing with like hot dudes like Johnny Depp pretending. I was like a little bit like young adulty, kind of like melodrama. I'm like, I don't see it. Then they crushed it.
Yeah.
And everything they can. I mean, honestly, I wish I saw their Star Wars movie. I guarantee it would have been awesome.
Yeah.
That's definitely one of the larger what ifs, I think, is like, what would their version of that movie, if they had done, for those listening who maybe don't remember, they'd done Solo. Yeah.
Been awesome. Mm-hmm. They just, the way that they work is that they push and they push. And what I really respect about them after getting to know them is like, they don't quit. When other people say like good enough, they keep working. Everybody who works on their project ends with like bags under their eyes. They're tired. At the premiere, when I saw like Kemp Powers, one of the directors, I'm like, you know, how you feeling, man? And his first word was relieved. Like, they're tired. They work like it's not like I don't think of them as guys where they just go like, here's my idea and it's brilliant. They work harder than anybody else. Like, they're working at that kind of 1% thing. And I'm like, that's, you know, they're talented and they work hard. That's going to result in good results.
I mean, we didn't even mention, like, making this work, making Jump Street work, and then, like, the fucking Lego movie.
Yeah. It's like, so good.
Like the Lego, it makes no sense. So it's
that one, too. I'm like, I don't think you should make a movie about the Lego stuff.
No, it's like, so crazy.
I think you have a whole franchise, man. I'm watching the Batman one, too, and liking it.
Yeah, it's just, I it's like maybe they can take an easy task for once, right? Like maybe just like maybe make an easy, straightforward.
How about
movie.
A romantic comedy, gentlemen?
Yes, exactly. Make an like direct an Adam Sandler movie. We were just talking to someone about being part of the Adam Sandler crew. Go to Hawaii, make a movie with Sandler and Peter Dante and stuff.
Have a blast. Make it easy. Make some buy each other Ferraris when the box office is cheap or whatever Sandler does, where he gives everybody Ferraris or something incredible.
Exactly. It's funny you mentioned the live action stuff because Amy Pascal yesterday, or I guess at the premiere for you guys, she was mentioning how there's going to be like a live action Miles Morales movie that we're obviously working on, like Spider-Man Woman stuff. Miles Morales, if you ever got to live action, would you ever answer the call to be in a Miles Morales live action thing?
I mean, if it was this version of Peter,
that's
absolutely, you know, I love this version of Peter a lot. But I'm sure there would be a line of actors who would be very excited about putting tights on and getting, you know, wires on their legs and flipping upside down and all the green screen stuff that is not something that really overly excites me. And so, but I love playing Peter B. Parker. I think he's a really great character. I think he's really fun. And so, yeah, possibly, but I don't give it too much thought.
I like Peter B. Parker. He's like the alternate universe women be shopping. Yeah, he's like the other end of the spectrum of that.
You got to say Peter B. because when this thing started, I didn't know anything about the multiverse. So Phil was like, I want you to play, you know, Peter Parker and Spider-Man. And then he's like, then there's another Spider-Man. And I'm like, all right, I'm good to share. And then he's like, then there's another one. And then he's like, so Peter B. Parker is just like one of 100,000. And I was like, okay, I understand.
You need like a social security number. Like exactly listed right. Within it. The last time you heard, we talked to you about Minx and HBO. I was so fucking pissed when they canceled it. That show was awesome. It was so good. I know you guys got picked up by Stars, right? What can you tell us about it?
I mean, we're about to start press for it. It's coming out. I should know the exact date. I think it's like July 17th or sometime really soon. I know I'm going to Austin tomorrow to do the festival down there for it, which I think starts the push for it. But it's great. The season two is really fun.
Oh, I can't wait.
We actually filmed, my character gets the rights to the Deep Throat premiere. And so we host the Deep Throat premiere. But what's funny is we shot the stuff in the theater where the premiere was last night. So it was really funny because the last time I was there, everybody was dressed in 70s clothes.
70s shit, yeah. At the
theater hosting Deep Throat. And I kept having the, and we'd spent so many hours, we shot a lot there. So it was really funny being back. But yeah, season two is great. I'm really excited to be at Starz. They seem like a great home. I don't know much about them. Mm-hmm. So they're very fired up. And having people who are really fired up about your show feels really good. And I'm excited to do it.
Yeah, we're super pumped out about it. Should we do the spider game, Jeff?
Yeah, we're gonna do a little. We're gonna do a little spider game with you. We're gonna. Cool. We both came up with our own alternate universe Spider-Man. We're gonna hit them head to head. You got to decide who would win.
Who wins? Perfect.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And
are these real ones, or you guys made them up?
Horribly fake.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Extremely fake.
Some might say uncreative, but we'll see.
Yeah, not even very particularly that's creative.
That's a different word for horribly. Uncreative.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. The first one, inspired by my love of 80s movie rivalries, Spider Schwarzenegger versus Spider Stallone.
Stallone.
Spider Stallone. He's the better writer.
Yeah, back in the day, 1980s Stallone, Rambos. I mean, come on. I like Terminator, but Rocky Stallone, come on.
Rocky, Cobra, but then you also have like Terminator, Predator. Like, oh, it's tough.
A good fight, but I got to go. I got to go Sly.
This one's pretty lame. this could be a dud. Spider-Ann, which is Ann Robinson, the former host of The Weakest Link, the game show, against Spider-Dunk, who was Brian Dunkelman, who was Ryan Seacrest's co-host on American Idol.
I got to go Dunk.
You got to go Dunk? Okay.
I'll tell you why. I don't like the way history is written, Dunk's story.
No.
If I were Dunk and I'm a stand-up comedian and I'm a co-host on that show before we knew it was going to launch, I got to get out of there, man. I'm with Dunk. What are you doing? Talking to amateurs after they sing poorly with three judges. Get out of here, Dunk. So it didn't work out for him economically, but creatively, I think he made the right call.
I like that. Okay. We've reshaped that. I like that.
I used to work in a big real estate company here. And one of the first things we do is rent Ryan Seacrest a $75,000 a month fucking brownstone. They won't die.
No way. All right. So Dunk loses. I'm with the other one.
All right, next one. Spider Lightfoot versus Spider de Blasio.
I'll go not Lightfoot for sure. I'll go de Blasio.
He is like 6'7". He's got the height advantage by a huge margin.
Yeah, I'll go de Blasio.
Spider de Blasio.
We'll go sitcom world. Spider Ross versus Spider Chandler. A little Spider Friends verse.
Ross is Schwimmer. 100% right. Yes. Mm-hmm. I got to go Chandler. I got to go Matt Perry on that one.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Tough for Schwimmer. You called out Schwimmer and then immediately said he lost. That's tough.
Well, I just wanted to make sure. I didn't want to do an amateur move and go hard. But I also think Chandler at that time, remember, he was doing a bunch of movies too. He had there was a whole nice moment for him.
Yeah. He did have a good.
I got to say, Schwimmer's got some longevity.
He does.
He does. He was a Kardashian. You know, I was rewatching Band of Brothers the other day. He's so good at Band of Brothers.
I saw him in that too. He's also, I think he's based out of Evanston, which is where I'm based out of. He's a theater guy. This is going to be a close one. This is going to be a close one.
Yeah. I like that. Spider cosplayer versus spider hygiene.
Spider cosplay versus hygiene?
Spider hygiene. The cosplayer's mortal nemesis, let's call it.
I'm going to go cosplay for sure.
Spider cosplay, I love it.
Cosplayer is punching air listening to this. Oh, I already turned it off. Simple one. But we had a big fight last night. Ken, Jack, and I, big Coke guys. Our producer, a big Pepsi guy.
Okay, clarify. Coca-Cola guys.
Coca-Cola, yeah. Ken, Jack, big Coke guy.
I genuinely appreciate the clarity there. I felt like You guys are probably leading out with your addiction in a bold way.
Very bold new way.
Yeah, so probably could have clarified
we're
big that.
Coke guys, we have a problem. We're dancing with Fent, and we'll see what happens. It's like, all right, yeah,
Spider Coke,
bed, but enjoy.
Spider
it.
Coke for Spider Fent is the next matchup. Yeah, that the genius comedy minds that brought you that.
Spider Coca Cola versus Spider Pepsi.
You know, I grew up as a Pepsi guy.
Oh,
my mother made it. We were I didn't realize there was a difference between Pepsi and water until I was in my 20s. So for the last decade or so, I've been against soda because I think I drank three a day from 1983 to 95. And when my teeth started falling out of my mouth, I was like, oh, yeah, this is poison. This stuff's really bad for you.
Our biggest lean for Coke is that they made the Coca-Cola freestyle machine, which is the most advanced piece of technology mankind has ever created. I don't know how it works.
Yeah.
So no idea how the tech works. Current Jake Johnson Spider-Man versus Multiverse Jake Johnson that got the role of Andy Dwyer.
What's the difference? Andy Dwyer from...
So let's say you got, I remember the last time you were on, you told us how you auditioned for the role of Andy Dwyer in Parks and Rec.
Okay, now I get it. Now I get it.
The version of you that got that role versus the current you.
I'm going to take the current. I liked, I think New Girl, we were in an era, a lot of actors, we all knew each other and we were all getting close to sitcoms. And it felt like a lot of us were going to land one. And it's how you landed. And I felt like I landed okay with New Girl. So
I'm pretty damn good.
Liz Merriweather kind of. She was the wagon I hitched to, and I think I picked a winner there.
I like the idea of you having your own, like, the Nick Cage movie. What was it called this past year?
Anything that you could, doesn't matter. Anything where you would compare me to anything Nick Cage means
what
I
was,
did it right.
What was the one from this year? It was... No, where he played himself multiple. It was
The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent.
Oh, I like the idea of you bullying the version of you that got Parks and Rec. Like, just...
I'll tell you, I like that. I like the version of me being in Con Air.
There we go.
Yeah,
I mean, can you imagine? I got some long hair. Rip these sleeves off. Let's see what happens.
And this last one is F level humor. Spider diarrhea or spider vomit,
which is worse, win? I guess.
Yeah.
Which is, so the winner is which is worse to have?
Yeah, I guess so. I guess these are villains. These are like anti-hero. Yeah,
I would say
not
diarrhea
good.
Is worse.
Yeah.
Vomit feels like, you know, I think I've just had too many bender nights as a drinker. Sometimes I've had moments where you're talking, you just go, yeah, and you're right back to the night. Hangover gone. It's like three bad, it's maybe about 45 bad seconds to save your next day.
Mm. Yeah, we're vomit. We don't know much about hangovers. We're more Coke guys, don't forget.
True.
We're just grinding our teeth to dust. But no puking, no hangover.
Yeah. By the way, perfect time to touch your nose there, too.
Oh, wow, I didn't even realize that. grinding
you're doing all the weird tells, man.
I just had a new idea for a podcast. There we go. That's that's the cokehead move, dude. I got this great idea.
Hold on. Wait a second. Okay, we got to slow down, man.
All right, we want to run you through a six pack before we let you go. Yeah. First question: six pack of questions. Again, we're just going back with beer and fucking drugs. Jesus. How many games do the Bears win this year? If you end up being right, we'll send you a prize at the end of the season.
Ten.
Yeah, I was just on the I was on the Rich Eisen show yesterday. We were talking Bears, and I genuinely think we're being built right. I think Poles is great. I'm 100% in on Justin Fields. I thought all that stuff about trading him and taking a QB number one was just such media nonsense. If you watch the Bears last year, he is a true leader. He's a true quarterback. I love having DJ Moore. I like
great
that
trade.
I think awesome it's a great trade. I also like Edmonds from Buffalo as our middle linebacker.
Great linebacker.
I kind of feel like we're a couple pieces away from being very good, but I think we're going to get 10 this year, and I think we're going to get into playoffs, and it's going to be a great start for us.
We're excited to
mix
watch.
It up in that. Can mix it up in that division too. Vikings are a little overrated.
Vikings are so overrated.
Lions could be, but you know, I'm sorry to Lions and Jets fans listening. One of you guys is going to stink because every year there's that one team that gets. Totally, as a Browns fan, I know it from a couple years ago. Someone's going to suck. I'm sorry ahead of time. It's just going to happen.
Here's what I feel about the Lions, and this is only from watching Hard Knocks. So they're a team based on like character and grit and getting along. What's that running back who was traded to New Orleans? Jamal Williams. He seemed to be the heart of that offense in terms of like personality. Like, remember the old like Pistons when you had Ben Wallace?
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you lose that character, even if you get another center, it's a different team. So I think that might be a big piece that they're going to really miss. I think the Packers are going to be good with Jordan Love, but not great. I think they're going to realize how much Aaron Rodgers did for that roster. And I think the Vikings are going to be good, but they're not going to be world beaters. And so somebody in that division has to go on a nice run, and it might just be the Chicago Bears.
There's a cosplaying Lions fan who's just turned this podcast. He's like, fuck these guys. These guys are the worst.
The Lions guys. Fuck, I forgot their names. We'll just give you one more. You get whatever budget you want for the next movie that you direct. You obviously had your directorial debut this year. Who are three actors that you would love to cast? It could be any type of movie you want. Just three actors you'd love to direct.
You know, Andy Samberg was just in my movie, and we came back and we did a reshoot, and then he sat in editing and it became a real partner on this. And I think he's so funny and such a good actor and such a joy to work with. So I'd work with him again. I'd go Andy Samberg, an old friend of mine, Mike Serra. We haven't been able to work together in a long time, and I would love to find something with him. And then last but not least, I got to say probably Amy Poehler. I think Amy Poehler is so good and so funny. When she's kind of on a roll, she's such a killer. And I'm such a fan of hers that I would just like to be around her.
I like that. That's a great trio.
Say Aubrey Plaza too. Let's go four.
There you go. Oh, yeah. Perfect. I like it. There you go.
We got Plaza as our number four.
A reunion.
That's a heck of a lineup right there.
Sounds like that Pistons lineup.
That's Spider. A mean lineup.
She's Chauncey Billups.
I would say she's Chauncey there. I would say Mike Sarah's Rip Hamilton.
Oh, yeah. The mask. I can picture it.
I would say we need a Rasheed Wallace. Maybe that's Samberg. No, that's Aubrey Plaza. Plaza's Rasheed Wallace.
Samberg's got a lot of Tayshaun Prince energy.
Tayshaun Prince chase down blocks out the wazoo.
Shout out to Minx coming back. But also, if you're listening to this and you have not seen Spider-Verse, I don't know why you're listening to this. Like, turn this off and go see Spider-Verse. Across Spider-Verse coming out. Thanks a bunch. Hope we can talk to you less than a year from now. Hope we can talk to you again.
Yeah.
Thank you, man. Guys. Appreciate it.
Thanks, man. See you later.
Take care, guys.
Good stuff with him. I forgot we did hypothetical Spider-Man in that interview. That was
good.
Yeah,
the one you ended with is the one you should have started with. That was not an ending one.
I know. What? What just happened?
What is this random interference? Chris, is your fucking computer freaking out?
No, not on my end.
Hello.
Hi. Test 1, 2.
Okay. It was also very funny, like mid-interview, to see his like wheels turn and him pivot his stance on whether or not he would do live action. Oh, yeah. Once you guys told him that Amy Pascal like had confirmed it, he's like,
"By the way, her production studio logo is fucking horrible." By the way,
is it? What is it? Like, what's the name? Just,
I think it's just like. Well, let me get the name of it. I think it seems pretty new because I haven't seen that.
I'm going to look up Pascal Company and just get a picture of Oscar Isaac. Folks, you get it?
Pascal
they're best
Pictures.
Friends. Pascal, a Pedro Pascal and Oscar Isaac, they're good friends. There's your joke explained for the day.
Pascal Pictures. It's a shit logo. Makes no sense. Stupid. Amy Pascal. Amy Pascal is a fascinating human being, by the way. You ever watch interviews with Amy Pascal? It's just probably a nice lady. Maybe, I don't know. Strange person. At least for like that role in Hollywood. Some people are like David Zaslav, another whack job.
Bozo
Warner, yeah, absolutely.
Bozo alert.
Bozo alert. And they're struggling now. Like they got a lot of problems with CNN and everything, and like it's Zaslav.
Oh yeah, what happened with that CNN? What happened with that dude? Their CEO. I saw he was in hot water. I didn't see what for.
Yeah, there's a lot of Chris Licks, yeah, who I think came from NBC, if I recall.
My least favorite porn star, Chris Licks, worst part of every
porno. He had a bad profile in the Atlantic or something. I don't fucking know. I don't fucking know. But
well, imagine getting your career torpedoed by the Atlantic. Oh, on a pay-per-view article, some guy paying $12 for a year to read that fucking shit.
Chris Licked.
Oh, that sucks. Chris Licked. Boo.
Hey, it's Fran from Chicks in the Office. It's peak summer. One plan is turning into five, but trust, I'll be wearing Abercrombie to all of them. Catch me in their Sloan Taylor pan at work and then the happy hour right after. The Dylan dress for dinner plans when you want something easy but still put together. And of course, their denim. Because Abercrombie denim just works, no matter the plan. Keep up with the pace of summer without overthinking it. Shop in the app, online, and in stores.
Now the movie. Now we will talk about the movie. Into the Spider-Verse 2, which I'll pull up. I don't really need a synopsis. Fucking fan in here. We'll do it anyway. After uniting with Gwen Stacy, Brooklyn's full-time friendly neighborhood Spider-Man is catapulted across the multiverse where he encounters a team of spider people charged with protecting its very existence. However, when the heroes clash on how to handle a new threat, Miles finds himself pitted against the other spiders. He must soon redefine what it means to be a hero so he can save the people he loves most. People involved, this will be no spoilers right now, so I'm not going to say anything too spoiler heavy. Because I don't want to, you know, like I obviously spoil something that, like a cameo or anything. Shameik Moore back as Miles Morales, Hailee Steinfeld, back in her role as Spider-Gwen, Oscar Isaac in the role as Miguel O'Hara, who we saw in the post-credit scene in the first one, Spider-Punk played by Daniel Kaluuya. We saw him in a lot of the trailers, Jake Johnson playing Peter B. Parker, Brian Tyree Henry as the father of Miles Morales. Karan Soni, who was in Deadpool, I think a lot of people know him from. He played the Spider-Man.
That's who that was.
The Indian. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Interviewed him once. Who's cool dude.
Batten, yeah. That's a cool one. Issa Rae is in it as Spider-Woman. Jason Schwartzman voices the villain, Spot. Lauren Velez voices Rio Morales. A bunch of other characters, which I won't spoil. Though I will know off the top, no spoiler. We talked about Rachel Dratch like the day before this podcast, before we went to see the movie, and Rachel Dratch was like in the movie, which is crazy because it was like, oh fuck, like we just talked about Rachel Dratch. This movie's great.
There are several cameos in this movie. Jeff reacts to zero of them except for fucking Rachel Dratch.
The first thing happened when the movie ended, I turned to Gooch and I was like, by the way, turn is a polite word. We saw this in one of Gooch's favorite theaters in the city. What a piece of fucking shit that theater was. I mean, the chairs, and we're not the tiniest dudes of all time. I mean, Gooch is much smaller than me and Ken Jack, but like,
that's why he likes it so much. He's a fucking field mouse just like scurrying around this theater, eating up scraps in his tiny drinking Pepsi.
I'm like Despero.
First of all, Pepsi. Second of all, the recliners in this Regal, it's not like a button that you press where it leans back. You have to force your seat.
It's manual. Fucking medieval. Like, what the hell, dude?
There's no footrest. You have to absolutely fucking rock your back into this seat, and then you're just kind of like holding it up, like at least it's so uncomfortable. We also, this is probably my fault, sat in three of the worst seats in the theater. We were under the subwoofer. You could barely, if there was music playing, you couldn't hear one fucking line of dialogue.
None.
And it opens up with like a pretty, again, spoiler, I guess. It opens up with Spider-Gwen in a band. So it's playing very loud music. And I was like, fuck, man, this is going to be the whole movie. We can't hear this. But it wasn't that much of an issue after that.
Excuse me, sir. Would you like a refill on your Mountain Dew Code Red? No. Bozos.
Just no urgency from anyone who's in a Regal, by the way. It is, and Gooch knew it too. He warned us. He goes, oh, by the way, this line, it was like five people. It's like, it's going to take forever. And sure enough, it did. They're just not moving.
Some lady in was ordering a 10 Schweppes ginger ales.
They're too busy making chicken tenders.
Brutal.
I'll be honest, it was a bad experience. And then The icing on the cake was someone tweeted at me the next day. You know that stupid fucking intro they play before their movies?
Yeah.
I hate it so much. I hate it. I've hated it for 2 years ever since they started playing it.
Yeah, it's the
and
worst.
They know people hate it, but they've started taking the quotes from the fucking intro and putting it on their on their sessions. And I was like, nope, it's the last straw. I got AMC stubs yesterday.
Also, AMC used to have like A-list. A real like a real movie theater feel like to the logo and Hollywood. And now it's all like this like SpaceX shit. Like
It looked like a laser tag arena. We didn't even remember to mention the dude that some dude wore a fucking helmet the entire time we were watching the movie. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
What happened in this theater, dude? The hell is happening in this theater, man?
Fuck. I couldn't get over the fucking seats. I leaned back expecting that footrest to pop up and nothing. It was so uncomfortable. Dude,
even like the world's shittiest like Spirit flight, you gotta press a button to get the seat back. Like no. Yeah. Like in Regal, you gotta push you manually push this shit back. Like you're a Regal. Fucking serf in a feudal kingdom.
We value our customers. We're going to make sure they have good posture. Good posture.
You warning us it was going to take forever with five people in line was my thing. You're like, this is going to be a while, by the way.
They don't accept Apple Pay, which is just absurd. I've gone to the movie theater so many times without my wallet. They're just like, you can't get food.
Dude, that it was like the Steve Stevenson skit, except it was like made up like lipstick on a pig. You know what I mean? Like it was like the outside of it was all SpaceX-y, but then like every operational part of it was Steve Stevenson.
So fucking spot on.
Respect the cinema. Respect it.
Okay, now to the movie. Pop. The movie's fucking awesome, I guess. That's basically what I want to say. I love this movie. Is it as good as the first? I don't think so, but I don't know what that's saying much. Like, whatever. If you think it's better than the first, like, that's fine. Like, I have no qualms about – unless you don't like the movie. I have a qualm if you don't like the movie, basically. Like, you're allowed to have your opinion, whatever, but that would baffle me. If you like this type of, like, comic book stuff and this type of thing and you don't like this, like, that's crazy to me. I thought it was fucking incredible. I think it's maybe – like, if I'm going to give it one complaint, because I don't really want to talk about complaints here, I think maybe it tries to wrap itself up a few too many times at the end. Like, maybe it goes on a little too much. Yeah. But, man, I don't even know, like, spoiler, I guess, a little bit here. Everyone knows it's a part one. What a fucking great cliffhanger. Like, landed the cliffhanger. And I'm, like, fed up of hearing people talk about the cliffhanger like it's a bad thing. Some great movies have cliffhangers. Like, I mean,
we'll talk about that.
My go-to movie is a cliffhanger, Empire Strikes Back. Like, I don't know. Like, I loved it. I can't wait to talk more about, like, spoilery stuff, because we will talk about that ending there. But this movie, I think it's legitimately the best-looking movie I've ever seen in terms of the animated. I don't think it was a better animated movie ever made. Like, I really don't. I don't know what would be. It's just fucking – it's amazing. So this jumps – for me, all of the MCU, it's right up there with the Batman and Logan. Not as good as the Dark Knight or the first Spider-Verse, which I do think the first Spider-Verse is just it's a fucking masterpiece. This movie fucking rules, and I like it the more and more I'm away from it. And the music's great as well. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So 93 out of 100. I love Spider-Verse. One of the top five, I guess, comic movies ever made, I think.
Wow.
Yeah, I think I'm right there with you with the adulation of it. I landed on a 97 out of 100, which is obviously a little bit higher than yours, but I also have the first one at a 99 out of 100. I think the first one
I thought it was 100.
No, I have it as 99. You have it at, I think, a little bit lower, like 96 or something.
It's 96 or 97. Okay.
Yeah, but it's like about as close to a perfect movie as you can get. And I think this one is just – it's right up there. It's like splitting hairs as far as quality goes. Yeah. I think this movie, what makes it work is that a lot of it is just about, and we talked a bit with Jake Johnson about this, a lot of it is about perspective. like any large scale movie like this, basically you need an anchor, like something, especially with a movie like this where it's like so fantastical, right? Like crazy shit is happening. And I think the first movie did a really fantastic job of that, like Miles Prowler storyline anchor, which keeps you grounded into reality while all this crazy shit is going on. And losing that was tough going into this movie. It's like, what do you replace it with? But I think they did a really good job replacing it with the Gwen and Miles story and adding more of the family dynamic. And I think another huge success for this movie is that it was very successful at being its own movie versus just being a part one of a part two. You know what I mean? Like, as its own, standing alone, it is a fantastic movie. And like the fact that it leads into what is going to be a part two that hopefully is as good as this, even a better thing. And it just, it's in a movie that I watched it and I reminded how recently I despised how they ended F10, where it just ends. Yeah. And it's like, that's their cliffhanger. It's like, it's the movie's just, it's just like, hey, everything's going boop. Like everything, the storyline like had, like this was like a bit like, you know, it's like the wavelengths, like the climaxes, all that shit. Like it went down to the point where it's like, okay, now we're starting the rise again. The Fast and Furious was on the high and it just stopped. So like I think they structured that ending perfectly as far as highlights of the movie go. Animation, I agree with you, Jeff. Like I'd be hard pressed to find a movie that looks as like it, or is as like at least as unique as this is. The villain transitioning from more of like a concrete villain to more of this like broad fighting against fate type of deal, I think was really smart. And the new additions are really good. Like Punk Rock Spider-Man was awesome. Spider-Man India rocked. Ben Reilly, which I know Robbie is excited to talk about, and Oscar Isaac as Miguel O'Hara is sick as well. I loved everything about it. Walked out of it incredibly happy and just incredibly excited to see the next one, which is, I think, what you want out of a part one of part two, which is what I hope we get out of. We've had a lot of part ones this summer because we're going to have the same thing, Dead Reckoning part one as well. So it's the same thing I'm hoping we get out of Dead Reckoning part one.
Yeah, I essentially agree with all your praise. I guess I'm just not as strongly in love, but you know, I criticize movies for their pacing. I mean, basically every week on this show. I think in this instance, you really got to compliment a movie on its pacing. I mean, that did not feel like 2 hours, 20 minutes. That was a movie that really flew by. The huge reason for that is this is just like watching these movies. It's like watching just an amazing painter with like a blank canvas just going to work. It's just fascinating just to watch the overall creativity. And it goes back to what we were talking about earlier in the show. This is something that could only work in animation. I do disagree with you guys on the ending. I it's not the cliffhanger that I have an issue with. It's more so I didn't feel like there was much of any sort of resolution, like, or ending or real climax. I thought everything that it built up, it was building up to something and then it cut off. It is really? Not. And I've seen, yeah.
See, I think him getting out of the multiverse of Spider-Man, that was your conclusion of your main storyline, of him basically deciding, I'm not going to go along with this preordained fate. I'm going to go now do this. And that's your setup for part two.
I get that. I guess just I think this obviously is kind of the Infinity War to the next movie's endgame type of thing. But I just recall Infinity War, like we knew they were going to come back. We knew they were making another one. There was a finality to the way that ended with Thanos just kind of, you know, that was his movie and he completed his arc. I didn't feel like arcs were necessarily completed. Now, it's a bizarre thing to complain about because 10 months from now, I'll have seen the conclusion. So it's like I can complain about this for, you know, just a few more months. But as a whole, it's something I highly recommend, even though there's so much of this I like and don't love. It's the kind of movie I think people should see in a theater because, man, there is so much effort put into every fucking frame of this movie. And you could tell the makers of this love Spider-Man. And I think the fun that they have with the cameos and with some, you know, letting some of these characters pop up, it's just, you know, it's cool seeing Lord Miller go to work. I highly recommend it. It's like an 85 on your guys' scale. I it would not shock me if it made my top 10 at the end of the year. I really enjoyed it.
This is a Best Picture nominee. I'll just say that it hasn't happened since Up. I think this is a Best Picture nominee. This is the best animation I've ever seen.
Which would be, honestly, sorry to cut you off, fucking a great movie. Like, I love it. But it's so gross the other one didn't get nominated for Best Picture. It's so stupid.
I thought it did.
Yeah.
I thought it did. No. Maybe it's because it won Best Animated, but I thought it got nominated.
I think they do the right thing here and they nominate it. This is, like I said, Best Animation I've ever seen. It feels... Mm-hmm. It feels 10 years in front of the rest of the industry.
Right.
It's truly incredible looking at the number of different styles they're weaving seamlessly throughout the movie. It never stops. It's 2.5 hours of you have 6 different styles on screen and you can't notice any problems with it. It's fantastic. The voice performances, the VAs, some of the best performances we've seen in the last few years. The score. I've been listening to that score.
Emerson's
score is fucking phenomenal, along with the Metro Boomin soundtrack, which also not as good as the first, but still very good.
Off the top, the first, but it is pretty. I'm a big fan of the Am I Dreaming song. I fucking love that with ASAP Rocky. It's really good.
I like the slow one that they played. I've been listening to that one a lot. Yeah, not
it's almost a trade off. The score, I think, in this one is way better than the score was in the first one, and then the soundtrack the opposite. You know what I mean? It's weird. It's like they flipped.
Dude, the score is very. I went back and watched it again yesterday, and the score stuck out so much this time. I was blown away by it. And this movie is just fantastic. I'm at a 95 out of 100. It's not. I have it just a bit lower than the first one. The first one I think is just tighter narratively.
But yes,
and if I did have to take points away from this movie, it is the ending, which I do think they were kind of indecisive on where to split it. Because if you remember, this movie was supposed to be a single film, but then they made the decision, we're going to split it so we have the time to tell the story.
I don't
respect to them. And
my thing with the ending, and I love it. I think the reveal is great. Like I felt like a fucking adrenaline rush when they were about the reveal, and you kind of realize like, oh shit, he's the Prowler. Like this is fucking crazy. Like this is also like you've seen the things like his spidey senses, the coloring was different. Yeah. Like very cool. My thing was I do think they dropped a few too many hints that he was in a different universe. I wish that would have been a little more of like a, because I kind of picked up on it when he was getting Zeph back. Like they said the different year, they said the different universe numbers. Like, oh, that seems a little like it's. So I think because it was drawn out a little more than it maybe should have been, I think you kind of pick up on it, and it doesn't spoil it, but I think that made it feel a little longer than it maybe could have been. I do love. We talked in the interview with Jake Johnson that like Spider-Gwen's whole thing is like a mood ring, the way the colors change and we're like melting. Like that was awesome. But I like felt – that was the thing. Like I fucking felt something when they reveal at the end of the movie like that not only is in a different universe, but like he is face to face with himself as a – you know, as the Prowler, as like the villain. I thought that was fucking awesome. That ruled.
That and I think the – combine that with the whole sort of bit where Miguel O'Hara is talking to him and he's like – yeah, the reason like you're a mistake, like you shouldn't exist, and because you do, that's why Peter Parker in the universe is dead. Like all that shit. I think that was you get a real like grounded storyline out of that in something where like that moment, right, where like where he tells him that they're on a fucking flying train in a multiverse where there's a trillion Spider-Men, and he's like flying up into the air, like, and then they sell you the storyline, which is in itself like so grounded and like a legit emotion you can feel like. In any other sort of I guess storyline or setting, whatever. So I think the biggest backbone of both of these movies so far have been like they have a legitimate like heart to them. You know what I mean? And like a storyline that feels like to a degree grounded and more relatable than it would be in like fucking Multiverse of or Madness or Ant-Man. It makes those movies look like ass in comparison. Like it makes it look easy. It makes it look so easy to do a multiverse movie. And like 90% of that is it being the animated medium, but like
right.
So
that
much,
is the
a
big
decent
thing.
Chunk of it is, but also the story is just so much more like you have so much more empathy with these or sympathy with these characters than you do anybody in the Marvel attempts at the multiverse so far.
It reminded me like just how bad Ant-Man looked. Like it's amazing these two movies came out in the same year. Like this thing feels like it should come out 5 years from now, and the other one looked a decade old.
Well, there's also like this is a testament to like the time spent on movies as opposed to pumping them out. Like it just like there's no world in which Ant-Man could have looked better given the time that they did. And like this movie, they were painstaking. Like the way they did it and the rules they had. Like I was kind of reading the rules about Spider-Punk and like they broke the rules here and there to like make certain scenes work, but like they really, it was like with a fine tooth comb, making sure this thing was perfect. And that'll never happen. Not even just MCU, DCU either. If they're going to pump out as many movies as they do, that just isn't going to happen. Which is, you know, it's tough when they're both doing multiversal stuff. So yeah, on that front, it's interesting, but that's probably
I'm trying not to just sit here and like gush over the animation, but it's like
it is crazy. Good Lord. I don't even know which one's the most impressive. I think the Spider-Gwen one kind of has me now that we talked to Jake Johnson. You talk about like the mood ring thing and how like I love the way like the walls were melting and all that, but Spider-Punk is kind of fucking crazy. That one really was Hobie, that shit was so good.
not just like the melting of it, it's stylized exactly the way her comics are written. It's using the three color panels where it's like you're only using three colors in a shot, and then you can flip those colors around depending on what you're trying to tell. Like, you can't do that in live action. Like, they're doing things with the animation that allows them to tell the story mm-hmm. even further than you could ever imagine. It's, they used all the tools at their disposal and they used them brilliantly. Every single character is just so well defined, like in a world where it's a million Spider-Men, but every single Spider-Man has their own personality and you can clearly pick them out. Like, the more I think about it, the more I talk about it, the more I fall in love with this movie, and I can't wait for it to come to streaming.
I'm excited for the first attempt to copy something like this with like a bad property and they fucking fail. I can't wait. That's gonna happen at some point. It's just a big flop.
The Blue Beetleverse. That's what's coming next.
What's like when they came out with the Playmobil movie after the Lego movie? Ironically, Lord of the
Rings. Oh yeah.
I mean, to their credit too, those guys are fucking unbelievable. And it's their how quick they are with humor is why it's so good. It's the Lego movie, it's this, it's Spider-Verse, it's 21 Jump Street, 22, even 22 Jump Street, which I love. Like, they are really like it's a joke a second, and they set up jokes in a way that they almost don't want to give you enough time to comprehend it, where you really are missing everything. And the funny thing is, it's like we talk about MCU stuff. The Russo brothers with Arrested Development are very much like that as well, which is kind of funny. You talk about like pairings who've done comic stuff. I just watched like an old YouTube thing about Arrested, and that's why Arrested was so funny, because by the time you process one joke, you're already on to two more, and you're like, what the fuck? And Lord and Miller the same exact way. And again, you get that in this movie. I talked about it's the dumbest joke. Peter Park car, you miss it, it's gone. But like, there's 100 other things that are happening in that second that you don't have time to really stop. That's another thing I'll ask you guys. I thought reviews that said they leaned too heavy on fan service were, I think, crazy. I don't think any of it was fans. Like, I don't think it was really fan service. Maybe Donald Glover.
Dude, maybe. Spot is the main villain. It's a made up character.
Right. It's like, that's my thing, is that having Spider-Man in it isn't fan service. It's a fucking multiverse movie. That doesn't mean fan service. Like, that. Like, again, I'll think about the number one fan service of all time is when they stop and they show through C-3PO and R2-D2 in Rogue One, and they like fucking wave at the camera. Like, nothing that was shown in this movie. Again, maybe when they go back to Donald Glover as Prowler, maybe. But even then, it's like it still fits. It fits in with it. That was a criticism I didn't quite understand. I was like, I saw before we saw the movie, I'm like, oh, like, are they gonna stop in its tracks? And they didn't. It just fucking goes. It goes.
That's the biggest thing, is that like a lot of these movies that do fan servicey moments, it's like you're training on a track and you got to stop and look at the attraction. You know what I mean? And like, that's when you watch something like Rogue One was a great example, but also even Rise of Skywalker. It's like, mm-hmm. Hey, we're chugging along. Hold on, stop. We got to go look at this thing so you can point and go, ooh, I know this thing. This is just like there's probably a trillion references in this that I will never get and never understand because I don't know enough about certain Spider-Man things. Like, I'm going to need to freeze and watch a YouTube compilation of all of it being pointed out, because like you're saying, it just goes through, bam, bam, bam. Here's this,
Atari,
this.
Green Goblin.
Yeah, like they're not stopping to figure this shit out. They're just rolling on through, and like that is what makes that.
Some of them go so fast. Some go so fast you don't even notice.
Exactly.
Do you guys,
yeah.
Do you guys see the Spider-Man popsicle? Was one of the Spider-Men chasing him?
No.
Exactly. There's so many. There's just so much stuff in there.
The Lego stuff. The Glover is hilarious.
The Glover one was definitely fan service, but like that one, it's almost like at some point you were going to have to put Glover either as an animated character or this, because do you all know his relationship to the character?
Yeah.
Like the full story, like he inspired more or less Miles Morales. Like Michael Bendis, the comic book writer, saw him wearing a Spider-Man shirt on Community. He's like, fuck it, we got to do Black Spider-Man.
Well, and there was that whole push where he wanted to audition for the Andrew Garfield movie too.
Didn't get it. Mm-hmm. That scene from Community is playing in the background in the first movie. When they're at Uncle Aaron's apartment, like, so there is a very tight knit relationship there between Glover and the character. So it was like, all right, if we're gonna do one, this is the one to do. I loved it.
And obviously, for those who do not remember, which you may not, in Homecoming, Spider-Man Homecoming, he's in it, and he references his nephew and all that, and so like that was like a big Easter egg there, and lots of people want him to play Miles Morales forever, or even just people want him to play Spider-Man. just like regular straight up Spider-Man. So
but even that, whatever.
It's like that doesn't. Yeah,
I'm pretty sure he voiced him one of the shows too. But the shows kind of stink. The animated shows. Yeah, God, this movie, man. I'm so excited for part. I'm so happy they did it together.
Yeah.
So that way,
definitely. You couldn't have ended this one the way you did and say, wait 5 more years.
No.
Yeah. So, I really do think tied for top. I mean,
I want to shout out the director too, because he did a great job here. The director was the director from Soul, which Soul had the issue of good movie, just not for kids. I will stand by that take. I do not think it's an enjoyable movie for children.
You weren't on the pod yet at that point. I don't believe
we all agreed by that. Yeah.
We said like this was geared for adults. I think Soul's awesome.
But beautifully directed, and you can feel it here too. There's a clear direction. There's a director behind here, like storyboarding. Yeah. Like it's just wow.
I don't think I got much else on this. It's just a fucking amazing movie.
Shout out Rio Morales too. His mom is really hot.
Good vibe in that rooftop party, by the way.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Great vibes up there. Yeah. I'm very, very excited for the next one. What do we have next week?
Transformers, right?
Transformers, right?
We're talking to
Anthony Ramos
Tuesday, tomorrow.
Yeah. Oh, tomorrow,
Yeah, Transformers Rise of the Beasts, which Ken Jack has seen already.
I have. Can't talk about it. Can talk about through social express and extraction too.
Written by Joby.
Watch it.
Ken Jack saw a movie recently, and there's a crazy thing that happened. Maybe it's Extraction, maybe it's Transformers, maybe it's Mission Impossible. I won't tell you what, but he told me like a twist, and it is pretty fun.
It's good. Like,
I was quite surprised. I was a pig. I decided to be spoiled.
Optimus Prime pulls out a massive dong.
They did that in the second one. Too late.
He hangs dong. Yeah. Times Square. They got Optimus Primal and Optimus Prime. If you want to get the life size version,
yeah.
Robbie, go check it out.
Yeah, can't talk about that movie. I think until 2 days,
and then go across the
Puka de Beppo. Primal.
That's still there.
I think Buca de Beppo.
It might have style never goes out of style.
Yeah,
Sophia the guy
still there, brother.
Oh yeah,
well known Italian Sofia Vergara.
Well known Italian, the Pope.
Yeah,
he's more Italian than Sophia.
All right, that's it for Ken Jack and Gooch and Chris. I'm Jeff D. Lowe. Transformers. Wow, we haven't done that and. You did, by the way, you did tweet that.
Bumblebee. I fucked up.
It doesn't count. We're talking mainline, brother. We're talking mainline Transformers. Go watch The Last Night and catch up. That's it. Talk to you next time.
Have a good week at the box office, folks.
Dedication isn't born in the light of day. It's carved in the quiet hours before the world blinks awake. At Boar's Head, we rise with a mission. To deliver craftsmanship worthy of your table. A slice of something special folded into every moment worth savoring. Because dedication means delivering only the very best. Boar's Head, committed to craft since 1905.